Hello, you're listening to a Talk of Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
And today's episode is our first impressions of the... One of the seasons, Spring 2023 anime season. This is our second parter, of course, because we've gotten through a whole bunch before. Hopefully we can get to the rest today. We'll see. Just depends on if Chris passes out. He's looking drowsy. And his pop filter's way too low. What happened to your pop filter?
I don't know.
It's drooping.
Somebody else set it up.
It's a little upset for some reason. Okay. Yeah. So how you... I don't know. How you doing?
How you doing?
Just a headache, man.
How you doing?
Just a little headache. You know what I'm saying?
Anyways. And he hurts himself.
Yeah, I know, right?
He still got that ballerina accident still hurting today that it was last time. Anyways. Yes. Our spring 2023 anime season... First impressions. I'm not ready for reviews yet. I'm all over the place. I'm tired today. We're all tired. But yes, as per usual, from otakuspirit.com, it's where you can go for all of our links, social media links, our links to our Discord, our fantastic community there, as well as ways that you can support us monetarily through Patreon. A tip link if you just want to throw a couple bucks or something like that, or you can just go to youtube.com/otakuspirit, become a member there, get some cool little emotes. We're like 2 members away from being able to get more emotes. So
yeah.
I shamelessly plugged it during the Mushoku Mondays. Come on, guys. We can add a Norn emote if you add... I need 2 more members. Anyways, but yes, let's dive right into it. Let's kick things off with the Idolmaster Cinderella Girls U149. And this one follows a company that does idols in Japan. And they are currently trying to create a new group called the Third Entertainment Section. And you get a kind of quick idea early on with these guys that are working on the project, like, you know, this is just the president's next project, his whims. He just creates these dumb projects and they just completely think this is going to be a failure because this particular idol group is going to be all girls that are under 149 centimeters, which is pretty much they're all from grade school. I think they're pretty much all grade school. It's like age 9 through 12. They're very young. So they're thinking this is just going to be a failure project. This is something that you shouldn't be doing. But so they decide to kind of find a random guy that works at the company to head the project. They call up this one guy that's been pretty much working for the company for a while now, and he's been always having these... You can obviously get a sense that he's always wanted to be a producer, but he's got his finally got his chance. They're like, so how long have you been working with us? Oh, I've been working... Do you want to be a producer? And he's like, yes, I do. you can hear the hesitation in the guy's voice, like, do you want to do this? Because he knows it's going to be a failure project, or he thinks it's going to. Anyways, he meets the cast of girls, the idol group itself, and they immediately think that he's a lolicon that just kind of walked into there. They were assuming he was going to be some older guy that's really reliable, but he's actually like, he looks young. Like, you obviously get a sense this guy's probably dealt with the fact that everybody thinks he's super young because he looks young. And of course, his initial shock is that he thought that he walked into, I don't know, like a nursery or something like that. So he obviously makes his first impressions upon them. So you get the sense that these girls, at least from Arisu's perspective, one of the girls, this guy just sees them as children. When all these girls have been waiting for their moment to actually debut and become idols, and everybody kind of looks down upon them, obviously, because they're young. Whereas the opposite end is he has to realize that these girls do have passion, that he does want to be a producer. He has the desire for that Kira Kira Sparkle Sparkle that you usually get with the producers or whatever. He wants to see them shine on the stage so they have an equal dream. So, and they have an episode where Nina has a problem losing her comfy hoodies, and got an episode where Media, she has her debut on a live stream which she shouldn't be on. And that's about as far as I've gotten. I didn't get to watch the recent episode 4, so... I'm very mixed on the show. I was pretty hyped coming into the season because I love Cinderella Girls. The Cinderella Girls anime was super good. Loved the writing. Had some really emotional moments at the very end that got me really worked up. So I kind of was going for that pedigree and was really excited for this series. Plus being done by Saigames Pictures, which doesn't skimp out on animation when they need to. You can obviously see that. And unless I'm mistaken, I don't think that anything was CGI so far, which is great for idols. Not doing CGI for once. But I was excited for it just for the brand itself. And obviously some of these characters kind of popped up in the previous Cinderella Girls. I'm not sure if all of them did, but I'm pretty sure I've seen plenty of them. So I was excited to see their journey. And it's already got a kind of establish it early on, this idea of, you know, girls that are seen as just children, obviously don't take them seriously. Some of them wanting to be taken seriously. Some of them having insecurities and getting over those insecurities. Industry itself, obviously, even the higher ups not really seeing this as a viable concept, and just them trying to fight their way to the top. It's as underdog story as you can possibly get in the idol sphere, and I'm kind of excited to see how it kind of turns out. Now, first episode, decent. It just kind of established the characters, their driving force, as a group. Second episode, as much as I love Nina, voiced by Tama, super cute voice, it was an okay episode. It was really just some kind of running around trying to find this thing, and Nina realizing that people don't like her because of her little cute hoodies, it's because of her personality. It was fine. I really got a kick out of Midia's episode, just because it was kind of one of those things where suddenly this cute little lolly, I think she's like 9 years old, on this stream on accident, and then suddenly the President Simpson does a super chat to her, and then everybody starts super chatting her, and then she kisses at the screen. I'm like, oh girl, this is going bad. It's kind of one of those things where it's sort of sprinkling a little bit of uneasy, like, yeah, this is kind of wrong, but at the same time not dwelling in it to make it kind of nasty. And so I kind of like that they did a pretty decent job of kind of balancing that whole thing out. But I thought it was super hilarious. And it's just one of those things where, yes, you can see the wrong in it, but at the same time you kind of go, yeah, but it just happened. And they didn't dwell in it. And it was super cute in that regard. And it had a little bit of sense in there of, obviously, people criticizing her and the criticisms that you get online and her having to deal with that brief moment of realizing, I'm kind of ruining the stream. Is this my fault? And then them realizing, no, they're just kind of nasty people that are out there, or they just don't like the flow of the stream itself, and so they're criticizing. So it was a cute little subtle message in there while just having this cute little moment with the characters. So I'm excited to see where it goes from here. I will admit, it's not living up to my hype, but that's my own fault. But it is still technically like one of my sugar shows of the season. Like, just watch these girls have fun, get excited for them, root for them, have some little turd-jerking moments here and there. We'll see how dramatic it gets, but so far, it's decent. I will say that I was kind of a little bit... I was almost going to praise the show for not dwelling on the whole lolicon thing, because, like, the first episode, when he initially comes in there, they all immediately think he's a lolicon that's, you know, jumping in there, and they never did it again after that, and I was about to praise it for that, and then I think, if I remember correctly, the third episode, they did it again. I'm like, this is going to be an ongoing joke, isn't it? My assumptions that was going to be an ongoing joke, and nope, here it is. It's the ongoing joke, so we'll see. I'm excited to see where it goes from here. It visually looks good. Like I said, the dance routines look beautiful and everything, so characters are fun. I'm hoping a little bit more heart and character development will happen in there, but I'm not necessarily expecting it because of the age of the characters. They're just in that age group where it's kind of a wishy-washy as if they'll actually have substantial growth, because they're still very young. They're still maturing, and at the same time, you expect that they're still going to mature even beyond this point. So they're at an age where they're kind of all over the place. So that's Idolmaster Cinderella Girls U149. Excited to see more. Moving on, we have Yuri Is My Job. No? Yes? You did? Yuri Is My Job, or Watashi no Yuri wa Oshikoto desu. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll for 12 episodes, done by Studio Passion and Studio Lings, I think. But yeah, this one opens up with a girl named Hime, very quickly establishes that she likes to put on a facade. She likes to be this fake self in front of all of her classmates because she desires for everybody to like her. So she has this very bubbly, very nice and cutesy nature that she wants to do, because her whole goal in life is to be so cute and so lovable that she's going to nail that one guy that is the son of an oil company runner or something like that. She's looking for riches. She wants to find the sugar daddy, marry him, and then be set for life. That's her goal. And that quickly blows up in her face, because as she's walking to or from school one day, she ends up bumping into somebody named Mai Koshiba, and Mai Koshiba falls over, and Hime immediately realizes that everybody's looking at them, and then so Hime puts on her facade, acts all cutesy and everything, and then it seems like Mai Koshiba picks up on that, and immediately goes, oh gosh, my arm, it hurts so much, I have to go to work, what am I going to do? And so she ends up roping Hime into going to work at her cafe in her place. But you kind of get the gist that, no, she realized that Hime is good at acting, And her cafe that she runs is actually a cafe that's kind of like a – it's kind of like a stage performance. It's a cafe where all the hostess that go in there and that serve people act out that they are in this all-girl school. And so, you know, he has a little bit of a Yuri sense in there, and they kind of have their relationships, and they serve food while they're telling the story, essentially. So it kind of turns one of those things where now Hime is in an environment where she technically has to put her facade into use in doing this job, while at the same time realizing that she's not as good at it as she thinks she is, as you have especially Inokoji, one of the attendants there, doesn't seem to like her, so she's constantly throwing her off and spinning things around on her. So it kind of turns into a game of who can put on the best act and throw the other person off kind of thing. And eventually you get the story as to why Hime has such a fear of people not liking her and wants to put on this facade, and the obvious connections that she has to certain characters, which I'll probably get into because it's going to be part of my frustration. You get to learn Hime's friend, Kanako, who is obviously in love with her and sort of yandere-ish. She's overly jealous. Let's say that. She's overly jealous. You have Tachibana, who is very gyaru-ish outside of the club itself, but inside she's like this very bookworm, very beautiful type. So, yeah, all the while Hime keeps getting roped in to keep doing the job because the manager keeps acting like she's actually going to the hospital. So, thoughts? Oh, yeah, there's also a chef, Nene. She showed up like 2 times. Very curious to hear Chris's opinion on this one because I have a very strong opinion on it.
I almost can't stand the show. It's one of those shows that for some odd reason it looks like it should work. As I'm watching it, I keep watching it because I want something to kind of break through, and it feels like, for all intents and purposes, everybody is just nasty people. Everybody wants to destroy everybody else for
not,
one reason
not
or
Nene.
Another.
Nene is just fine. Oh, no, she could be sabotaging people in the background. And Tachibana is okay, but she could probably be... That's getting into my thoughts. I'm going to stop.
And that's the thing.
I hate every one of these characters, but... Oh, wait, no, these two characters are fine. Wait, until we get into them, I'm probably not going to like them.
Well, yeah, I mean... Yano and Hime's story kind of is it probably is going into what you're getting ready to say is they're kind of the icing on the cake of why I absolutely despise the show. I haven't watched it since for the last couple of weeks, and I'm probably...
Did you get the backstory at least?
Yes, that was kind of the straw that broke
was
the
me
camel.
Too.
It was like
suddenly I'm like, I just really don't like these characters.
I don't.
At all.
Their entire
existence is based on one encounter, and it's just a stupid encounter.
It
makes sense, but still, it's annoying.
I just haven't pushed myself to watch the next episode or two, whatever, however many there is right now. But that was the thing is it was obvious that Yano was Inokoji. I mean, that was obvious from the get go, and so I was kind of holding out this hope that okay, maybe they can kind of shape their relationship a little bit differently and things will kind of shift and maybe everything else will fall into place. But as it stands, when that was finally revealed to them that, hey, they actually do have some kind of past, it didn't change their perspectives on anything as far as I
could
see.
It just made it worse.
And it's like, no, there's no growth here. There is absolutely no growth. And I'm so frustrated with these characters because they are literally all nasty. I mean, even Hime, who her kind of concept is, I want to give off this persona of being cutesy. But when in actuality, she's not necessarily nasty. She's driven. And I'm fine with that. But the problem is that she gets so frustrated with Inokoji that she's actually almost vindictive about the fact that she's not coming around to her. And so that becomes her frustration. And that makes me not like her. And that's the frustrating thing, is as each one of these characters are their personalities and their facade, I can deal with the facade thing. It's more along the line, and I can even deal with kind of nastier characters as long as I can see some kind of a hope at the end of the tunnel that, hey, they're going to change at some point. And as it stands right now, no, I don't even care if they do change. So maybe in the next couple of episodes, things will shift, but right now I don't see it.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest problem. It's like when I watch this show and when I think about it, it's more of the idea that it's not that the concepts don't make sense. It's got a solid driving force. It's the mask that we put on, then putting them into a position where the mask is sort of their act. And yes, like I said before, I technically do understand the concept of why Hime has that insecurity, this deep-rooted insecurity, even though it was initially kind of portrayed from her mind perspective that she just wanted to get a hot guy. When you come to find out later on, no, it's not about getting a hot guy. It's because she just doesn't want to be hated by people, and people know that that she's fake. And then it turns into, let's get into the backstory and how that kind of is a thing. And then her struggles with the idea of, you know, say Ayana Koji going and telling everybody that she's always been fake, even though that's their job. I don't even know why that's a thing. It's overall presentation of it, I think, is what kind of frustrates me, is that I don't really necessarily find these aspects entertaining. Comedic, it gave me a chuckle here and there with maybe possibly like the whole sister concept that they have, where like there's this, she calls Ayana Koji her sister, and then immediately they get dragged to the back and said, what are you doing? You're ruining my character. Like, they take this cafe super serious. It's a small cafe with 8 tables, but still, they take it super serious. They even have a website where people are constantly blogging about what the story turns are for this, which is like, I don't know if this is a thing in Japan, that people actually keep track of the storytelling within this small cafe that barely has anybody showing up, it seems like. But they apparently have enough people showing up that they have to theorize on a website and a message board about who's getting with who. But it's very important to them. So the idea of her calling her sister is like, you're ruining my character. And then the manager kind of has to present this idea of, oh, well, there's this concept within this novel where if you exchange this, you become sisters. And so they have to do that. And it gave me a little chuckle on the idea that Hime is literally goading Ayana Koji to do it. Because when they were behind the scenes, Ayana Koji's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to become her sister in my character. And so basically Hime goes in front of everybody and all the guests and go, oh my gosh, I still can't get over that you turned me down and won't be my sister. And then it like forces her to have to do it. Otherwise her character looks like she's really mean. Again, there's little concepts in there that's interesting, but it doesn't hold together for me overall, and it just doesn't seem to be working. And I think that's mainly because I just don't like any of the characters. Hime is just, she's a fake character. She's a fake character, and her other side isn't that interesting. Ayana Koji is a jerk. Tachibana is just always at the window saying sexy things in front of in the cafe, not really interacting much outside of it. The manager is just essentially fake blackmailing Hime into working. Again, the Yandere-ish type of friend, whatever, doesn't seem to have much going for her either. I just don't have a character that I like. Overall, I just don't like these characters. They're nasty, and I don't know. Somebody joked about the idea if I don't really find joy in watching a show with a bunch of fake people. Or says something else, but I kind of agree. It's just a show of fake people and doing a fake job, and then getting upset that they're being insecure of the fact that they are faking. It was funny. It's like, I understand it, but at the same time, it frustrates me. The whole thing where she thought that Ayana Koji was going around telling everybody that she's fake, and it's like, but that's your job. Now, granted, it's probably more of her outside the cafe persona, but yeah, it's just not working for it. Visually, it's fine. I kind of like the style of it. It's very unique, very, very bright in certain regards, but again, I think that whole scene with Hime and Ayana Koji just kind of ruined it for the most part, so I just don't care. I don't care overall, so that's, Yuri is my job. It should work. Just doesn't seem to be working, so unfortunate. My one hit kill sister, Isekai one turn kill Nissan, Ane Dohan no Isekai Saikatsu Hajimashita. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, being done by Studio Gecko. This one follows a guy named Asahi. At some point, he gets in an accident. He was trying to help somebody, if I remember correctly. He was trying to save somebody. Gets in an accident, gets transported to another world. In this world, he's like, okay, I'm Isekai, time to do it. You know, I'm gonna do some good stuff here. It's an Isekai world full of fantasy, awesome. Ends up getting some gear, goes to the Adventure Guild, gets his card, goes out to his first quest, ends up running into Wavern. And as he's nearly going to get killed by this thing, he has, like, no cheat skill, even though he thinks he should have a cheat skill. All he has is a skill to throw a rock, and that didn't do anything. It just kind of hit the ground in front of him. As he's nearly going to die, he's, for some reason, cries out to his sister, Maya. And just so happens, Maya shows up. She just gets summoned to the world right then and there and just kills the dragon in one shot. So, hence the one-hit kill sister. Yeah, it kind of turns this whole thing where Asahi is super weak, but he has this extremely, extremely doting sister. And so she'll pretty much protect him from anything. And just so happens, she's extremely overpowered. They show her stat screen where it's like that typical kind of pentagram thing. And they're like, it doesn't show anything. And he's like, wait, is it possible that the diagram is going beyond the screen? So it's that much. It's that kind of OP. So she just destroys everything for him. The joke that kind of comes really quickly is the idea that Asahi gets credit for everything that she's doing because she wants him to have credit because she thinks it's great that she likes the fact that people are celebrating and congratulating and happy for her brother. So she's perfectly fine with him getting all the credit. But the problem is that kind of shoots up his ranking. And apparently if you falsify your power in that ranking, you can get executed. So he's kind of has to make it seem like he's doing it, even though his sister's doing it. So, like, there's this thug in the town, and nobody can stop him. They're like, oh, well, Asahi's here. And so he has to talk his sister into, like, doing an ability while he does this grandstanding thing. That way it looks like he did it. So, and then eventually one of the generals of the Demon Lord army comes looking for somebody to beat up. And obviously hears of Asahi, comes to try to beat him up, and ends up pretty much befriending him in a way, becoming another sister.
She became another sister, yeah.
So you have the fighting between the two sisters. So your thoughts?
And then we got the
El Siegfried guy kind of has a mental breakdown. Wish that happened.
We've got a sister at the guild as well. There's
a sister at the guild?
Well, pretty much. She's gonna be a sister. You know if she will be it.
Tangirl?
Yeah, the
No, Tangirl is the Gyaru in the Adventure Guild, which is always great. All the Adventure Guild girls are cute. Just a thing.
We got all kinds of big sisters. This is just another one of those shows that it is doing what it's doing and it does it just fine. If you like Big Sister, that's what this is. It's in a lot of ways, it's. I was hoping for kind of similar to Mama show.
Do you like her mom and her two-hit combo, two-kill-strike-kill-shot attack?
I was kind of hoping for that, but
no,
apparently it's not doing that.
I was not looking for that, and I'm happy it's not that.
I'm not you!
No, I mean, the main thing is what was the reason why I didn't like that show? The main character was obnoxious, and he hated his mother. This one, Asahi's like, yeah, he's like, he gets embarrassed about her, like, glomping on him and doesn't really want that, but he's not mean about it. He's just kind of like, oh, gosh, dang, you know? It just kind of happens.
Well, what I was... when
I love their chemistry more.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree. What I'm talking about is one of the things that Mama did was it had a lot of undertones of appreciating your mama, which is... like Andrew had said, him effectively not liking his mom and wanting to get away from her, it kind of, he had a nasty attitude towards her in a lot of cases, that I was kind of hoping that would translate in this one in some way where you would have at least some themes of appreciating your sibling and stuff like that. But
I think it sort of does a little bit.
Okay, but at the same time, as it stands for me, I still like it mostly because it's just goofy fun. Has these really kind of more just tones of being dragging in tropes for the video game side and throwing in the tropes as far as you're doting One-chan. But as it stands, I'm enjoying it.
Because I think for the most part, what kind of happens a lot is that he'll try to go out and do his own thing without her. And then it'll kind of turn into one of those things where something goes bad and he kind of calls out for her, but she's not really there. That's the whole meeting with the demon chick, and then realize that he actually does appreciate her being there. But yeah, I mean, it kind of turns that whole thing where it sort of turned into who is the better sister, and it kind of turns into, no, it's Maya. Maya is obviously my choice for best sister, mainly in the idea that she's willing to kill for him, but she's willing to stop for him as well. But no, at its heart, it's obviously just a fun show with, you know, a very overly doting sister. So it kind of plays into the whole sitcom bro-con crowd, and it's obviously doing that. It never really kind of pushes it too far. I that's why I kind of meant when I first initially seen the show, my concern was he was going to be a jerk to her. And my other assumption was going to be that it's going to be one of those things where it goes too far. It's trying to push it too far. But I think it's been very surprisingly wholesome with it. It obviously does seem like Maya really, really likes her brother, but it's not like she's ripping off his clothes every 2 seconds and trying to do him. Even though I'm sure she'd probably be fine with it if he asked. It's like one of those things where I think she would say yes to anything, but at the same time, it's not really happening. It's just cute. It's cute in that regard. It's fun. Not a huge fan of Maya's design, but she's still a lot of fun. I like her very goofy attitude that she has. Like I said, the chemistry between the two of them is really solid. I think where my issues, if I had to have any issues, kind of started coming up with Kimaria showing up, and I kind of felt like her jokes were kind of just pretty much the same. Like, it's like, okay, introduce a new character. I'm like, cool. Okay, then she immediately turns into a sister character. I'm like, all right, that's fine, that's cool. And then it just kind of turns into the same joke with him. Both these two have the same kind of joke going with Asahi, and so it kind of just repeats the jokes, and then it goes to the next episode. So I don't really feel like, as much as I'm enjoying it, the chemistry's fine, and it visually looks good. I mean, Gekko, which I don't think really has done anything, doing a really good job of the show as what seems like a new studio. Like, a lot of the fight scenes are really well animated. But, like, it as it goes along, it's just kind of, it's losing that flavor that it initially had. And so I'm kind of concerned for it at this point if it's going to actually turn out to be a solid show going forward. But so far, it's been fun. I got a huge kick out of finding out how Maya got there. I mean, they're sort of indicating this idea of Asahi was able to summon her, and that's technically his cheat skill, if you want to say anything. But it started getting this whole thing where, well, how'd you get here? Well, you're in a coma, and I was really badly saddened. And then you started whispering about some other world, so I thought that you got a isekai. So I immediately started banging my head against the wall to get myself in a coma. I'm like, fits the character. All right, got it. I mean, it didn't turn into something where she just immediately just gets teleported, or she ran outside to jump in front of a car or something, and she just literally just started banging her head against the wall, which is a little more comical, but at the same time, pretty screwed up if you think about it. It's fun. I'm interested to see more, but like I said, I'm not too hopeful for the series. I'm gonna keep my expectations that it's not going to turn out to be a spectacular series in the end. So we'll see. We'll see. That's my one-hit kill sister, and not the overpowered mother. Two Cute Crisis is our next one. Two Cute Crisis, streaming on HIDIVE, running for 12 episodes. The Japanese title is Kwaisugi Crisis, being done by Studio Synergy SP, based on a manga. And this one opens up with a girl named Lisa, and she is pretty much a group of... She's a part of these aliens that go around and pretty much destroy planets. And as she's pretty much surveying the planet of Earth to see if there's anything there that they want before they destroy it, she ends up discovering a cafe. She goes somewhere to eat, and this cafe is a cat cafe. And then she discovers the beautiful wonders of cats and how beautiful and powerful they are because they're so cute. And so she starts freaking out and pretty much turns this thing where she's kind of interested in the concept of these cats and stuff. So she keeps kind of keeping the spaceship at bay. Like, I'm handling something. Don't worry. While at the same time, they're trying to figure out what's happening down there while she's exploring pretty much every single cute creature of the world. It kind of turns this idea that obviously these other planets they've gone to, their own planet, they don't have these cute creatures. They just have these ugly alien creatures. And on this planet, there's just tons of really cute creatures that people keep as pets. And so she's exploring each one of them, dogs, ferrets, all that kind of stuff, all the while trying to keep them at bay. Them up there, they're trying to figure things out. Like, she has a cat at some point that's meowing into her comms, and so they're trying to they make like a mock-up of what creature could possibly make that sound. It's this ugly looking blob thing with this gaping mouth that's pointing straight up going meow, and it keeps meowing. They're all like, this thing's hideous and dangerous, we gotta go help her quickly. But it's kind of funny in that regard. So your thoughts?
This is one of those that it's doing fine. I like the concept. I think that it gets a little bit stuck on the its general concept, which there's nothing wrong with it being stuck on that concept. I never really got much farther than a couple of episodes in, so I kind of wanted to go a little bit longer on it. But the concept of it is in a way, it's a healing kind of concept. It's just generally this character going into whatever situation that she's involved with for the moment, and her just absolutely getting stuck on the fact that whatever this creature is she's dealing with is super adorable. That's pretty much where I'm at. I think it's a very simple concept, and it does really well with its simple concept.
That's pretty much where I'm at too. It's kind of the sum of what it's going for. I will admit it's a lot more entertaining than I initially thought it was going to be. Coming into the show, I just assume it's going to be character goes kawaii every 2 seconds as cat meows. And it's sort of doing that, but at the same time, it's still doing very well with kind of throwing some difference in there, keeping things fresh, having her introduced to different concepts. They got into the whole cat versus dog, the battle between cat versus dog concept, and how that's completely wild to her. Getting into her finding a cat, laying down judgment or justice against the people that was mistreating the cat, getting into, like I said, the people up in the spaceship trying to, you know, drawing their own conclusions about what's happening, and that whole concept of keeping them at bay. Those things are really kind of fun that they're kind of sprinkling throughout to keep it fresh. And then sort of giving they're going to do this anymore, but presenting the concepts like how an alien can sort of create force fields to keep a nagging cat away, and how you can, you know, often deprive your pet from the attention that they need. That kind of stuff is, again, sprinkled through there to keep it kind of fresh. And so, for that reason, it's a lot more than I expected to be, but at the same time, it's not something that I'm, like, clamoring for the next episode or anything. It's just a very feel-good show that just doesn't really have too much going for it. Not that I was expecting too much going for it. I actually do really like Lise as a character. I think she's a lot of fun, so, and her reactions are cute, too, so. We'll see. It's just a very okay show. Very in the okay realm.
Yep.
Very okay. It doesn't offend me. It doesn't have facades or cheat skills that make you hot. Just joking. Moving on. Let's go to The Legendary Hero is Dead. Thighs is Justice, obviously. The Legendary Hero is Dead opens up in a fantasy world where the hero has defeated the Demon Lord army, pushed them back to the gates to hell, closed the gates of hell, and then several years pass, and those gates have opened again. And as the hero is on his journey, fighting demons, going towards the door again, he ends up stumbling across this one town. Which, from the perspective of the town itself, we meet two characters, one being Toka and Yuna. Toka just has his little simple farm that's on his land, and he has a certain desire for these perfectly shaped, was it tulips? Perfectly shaped vegetables to be in the shape of a perfect thigh. But yeah, he's trying to make the perfect one so that he can slip a sock on it because he likes thighs, as men should appreciate beautiful thighs. And yes, his technically childhood friend, not necessarily childhood friend, the girl that lives in the town that he's kind of in, you know, after is Yuna. And she drops by every now and then and criticizes him for what he does, saying no men put socks on vegetables, and you see these other guys kind of hiding theirs. But yes, this hero comes, well, they get attacked by a demon, and that's when the hero comes by the town, ends up killing the demon. Come to find out, he saved Yuna from a demon a long time ago, so Yuna is absolutely in love with the hero, while Toka is off the side kind of going how much he hates the hero because he's stealing away his perfect waifu because she has perfect thighs. But yeah, you established at some point that Toka even though the demon lord, she criticized Toka for the fact that he's just sitting there growing a farm when there's people out there fighting the demons. And he's like, as long as my farm's fine, I don't care. I set up traps so that if any demon come by, he'll get stuck in the traps. Well, yeah, he was cooking up something to distract the demon, and that caught the nose of the heroes. The hero comes wandering over to his house, walks into his yard, and falls right into the trap that he created for the demons and kills the hero. And the town immediately is like, you're the one that killed the hero. How dare you? We're going to tell the church and the kingdom and everything. And he's like, if you go there and tell them that some random farmer kid killed the hero, they're going to think that you're trying to cover up the hero's death and that you did it. So he pretty much talks everybody into just burying the hero off the side and covering it up. Well, cut forward, the next day he wakes up and he is in the hero's body. And he doesn't know why. And come to find out very quickly, as this girl is nearly falling into the trap that killed the hero, because it seems like the hero's party just all likes falling in his traps. She apparently, knowing that he killed the hero, deemed that he was going to be the next person to take on the hero's body and continue on, because the hero told her, as a necromancer, if anything happens to me, put somebody else's spirit in my body so they can continue on fighting the demons. And so she stuck his soul into the hero's body, and that he needs to save the world. And if he doesn't, she's going to destroy the little casket that she has around her neck, which holds his actual body. So he's kind of forced to do it. Very quickly, over time, realized that he's the worst choice because he has a crappy mana capacity, so he can't even... His mana is so low that he can't keep the body from actually decaying, so he's very quickly turning into a skeleton. He has no power to use the sword from the hero or anything, so it kind of turns this whole thing where he's traveling around, trying to gain funds, on his journey to fight the demons, at the same time always kind of trying to cover up the fact that everybody thinks that he's a fake hero and that he's not the real hero, and he has to kind of put on this act. So, your thoughts?
I'm of two minds of this show. This show is absolutely garbage. And then on the other side, it's like, I love how absurd this show is. In its absurdity, it keeps in my mind as this show.
There's
that
nothing absurd about the appreciation of thighs. Be perfectly clear. Guy has good taste.
I'm at this point where I have to watch the next episode because we have very important things to do to save the kingdom, and so we need to get to the next episode. That's how absurd this show is. If anybody who's watched that last episode knows what's getting ready to happen in the next episode, you know how crazy this show is, because there is, like Andrew's pointing out, that's probably one of the more tame aspects of this show, is the fact that he's obsessed with the thigh gap and all that stuff. It is an absurd.
You mean the method to restore his mana?
The method to restore his mana.
Lay down and close your eyes.
Yeah, you lay down and close your eyes.
I don't have eyelids.
This show is just so goofy. And I, like I said, it's garbage. And at the same time, it's just so... You can't stop. Hey, how can they one up themselves in the next episode? Is literally the only thing that keeps me going. Is I just want to see how stupid they are going to get with the show.
It's so funny because it brings up the age old question as to which thighs are the best. And I really don't appreciate the fact that he doesn't appreciate Henri's thighs. That's the only thing that kind of upsets me, is that he should have appreciation for all thighs. So the moment that she decides to do Absolute Zone and he criticizes it,
yeah,
I'm like, I can't follow you no more, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a true fan of the thighs. They were pretty much sticks, though. So you could kind of see it a little bit there, but there's a thigh gap there, so it's plenty enough. But yeah, this kind of falls in the same category, is in the realm of something that it works when it works, and then most of the time it doesn't. And that's, I think, my biggest issue that I have with this series. It's like, it just has these really great moments where it just gets completely absurd. But all the other moments of it, it's either just not barely barely animated, at the same time just not really doing anything to really entertain me. And that's really my problem that I have. Like, the first episode was great. It was hilarious. The all-powerful hero dies to a pit with bamboo stakes inside of it, and everybody's freaking out, and he completely turns it on the entire village by making them all cover up the death of the hero. It's just, it's crazy in that regard. And then it gets into him going to the town, and then him, you know, taking a bunch of stuff from shops, and then them finding out that he's not really the real hero, and then putting him up on the thing, and then it turns into One of the hero's party members think, knowing that he's not the real hero, trying to take the body, and it's like, then they go and kill these demons. That whole part, it's like, it's just, you're losing me now. I really don't care. And then out of nowhere, it gets all crazy with Yuna and stripping her down, which is basically like, reminds me of Lucy.
Her character just completely reminds me of Lucy. You know she's Lucy.
Just throw her in the most inappropriate situations, and then she just has to deal with it, and she just does things. And she's actually turning out to be, like, the most strongest character in the show itself. I really like Yuna. I love Henri. It's got a solid main cast. It's just that when it gets into all the other stuff, it really gets boring. So it's kind of one of those shows where, like, one moment in every episode does something really cool, and the rest of the episode is just, shrug, can we move on? And I don't really particularly like Tolka. I like him, but I don't. I'm very mixed on Tolka as a character.
He's one of those characters that you just kind of... for me, anyway, he's a character that I just kind of tolerate. He's fine because
he does what you want him to do sometimes, but other times he's just kind of like...
He can be nasty once in a while.
Yeah, he's super nasty.
It's more frustrating in the fact that he is just so... He's selfish, and he's selfish to a fault, and that's the main problem, is he's unabashed in it, and it's endearing in some cases. In other cases, you're like, go away. You're just annoying the scene. At the moment.
You're ruining it.
And it's
like
funny
not
because
appreciating Henri's lies.
Yeah, it's funny because the mainline story is just there literally to give them something to keep going.
Are they doing anything?
It's one of those things. Is
time to make money? All right, guess we're going to the kingdom to get money.
Exactly. Let's go and get money from the king. Oh, he already promised the king never to take any money. What? Oh, wait. We promised not to marry the princess either. Okay, wait. So
he has a mana deficiency. He has to eat a lot. Okay.
It's funny because they're constantly, the storyline is pushing it forward, but it's just there to keep things moving forward. In a lot of cases, it's just wallowing around in its goofy jokes, and I think that it does that well. But like I said, I'm in the same boat with Tolka as Andrew is, where I can tolerate Tolka to a point, but his unabashed selfishness does get kind of annoying here and there.
Yeah, I guess really where I come down to is that, again, it's not a good looking show, and it has some great points. I love, like I said, there's a lot of good chemistry here. Them walking in to save Henri, and she just got this big old puddle of snot because they established previously that she has a bit of a snot issue. It has these little fun moments that make the characters really charming, but then, like I said, the rest, it's almost like it has these really high peaks for 5 to 10% of it, but the rest of it just doesn't seem to work. So it's very difficult to suggest to people in that regard. It has the same aspect of something like Kamikatsu, but Kamikatsu is more consistently hitting, whereas this one just has some very massive lulls. So, but it's got that absurd realm, and I think that's something that is kind of alluring to a lot of people. They just want a show that just doesn't apologize for anything. It just goes there, and it goes there quite often. So, again, like the end of the recent episode, because he has to restore his mana.
Hey, I never said that I was opposed to absurd shows. I just don't like cracked out shows. That's my problem.
I mean, there's a lot of methods that they swap mana in series, and so why not explore that one? I mean, it's very direct. There's like a whole bunch of choices, and that's the one they're fine with. That's the bigger problem. It's like, here, you could do it by doing this, 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 this. We can't do all those. We'll do this. Okay. That's absurd. Let's do it. Because why not? Otaku Elf is our next one. This one is Edomai Elf, which is streaming on High Dive, running for 12 episodes, done by Studio C2C, sources of manga. And this follows Koito, who is becoming the next lady, pretty much shrine maiden, to take care of the deity within this one shrine that the entire locals all adore and constantly give offerings to, which is Elda. And Elda just so happens to be a very, very old elf, like 600 years old or more. Apparently a long time ago.
I thought it was 400. Because she's
been there for 400 years. I think she's been there for 400 years. She's 600 years old. I think the 400 is... Yeah, she's been at the shrine for 400 years. Yeah. I wrote down in my notes, it says she's over 600 years old, but she got the shrine at 400.
They probably screwed up in somewhere in the translation, because they literally, in this last episode, they were talking about the ages of Elda and Yord, and Yord is 1 year older than Elda, and so basically she's 422 and the other one's 421. Remember that specifically.
Oh, I haven't seen Yord's episode, so I'll have to check it. So my notes say 600 years old, over 600 years old, and she was summoned 400 years ago.
How they did that then?
I wonder if it's years in that world.
I wonder.
That could be it. So we'll see. We'll see when Andrew watches that episode and he texts Chris, you're right or you're wrong. anyways, she was summoned to this world by somebody, and which is part of a joke, which I completely missed because that's kind of a issue of the show in general. But she was summoned by somebody very important in the past, and she was basically asked to look over the shrine. And so she's been doing that for 400 years. Well, problem is that, you know, it seems cool and everything, but as Koito finds out very quickly as she starts working there and taking care of Elda, Elda is pretty much turned into a neat. She's just a slav neat that does nothing but order stuff on Amazon, pretty much, buys stuff in, and does nothing but sit inside of her little room, consuming snacks and putting together model kits and collecting random bottles, appreciating things that we just think are really dumb. But yeah, and then over time you kind of get more concept of like Elda and her relationship with Koito, and yes, even Dragon, the little sister who cooks everything, and the appreciation for the food that she makes, and then eventually try to get Elda to leave and be, you know, go out to the outside world again. The reason why she became a shut-in, all that kind of stuff gets revealed as, she takes care of Elda. Your thoughts on Taku Elf?
Poor Elda and her long ears. She can't handle a little bit of criticism of her.
And the other girl does it. It's like, that's so mean. I think she literally told her that was a problem too. I don't remember.
This is one of those shows that I am literally on the, it's just right there above, you know, me being warm to it. I absolutely adore it for its just cute nature in a lot of cases. But nothing is really doing anything that is going, man, this is just pushing me to the edge. It doesn't make me all warm and fuzzy. It just, it's comforting to watch this show every week. And I kind of wish there was more to it, but it just sits there and gives me something for them to do every week. And they just be cute and sweet. I do get a kick out of the Hitori Bochi thing, because now that I think back on it, there's a lot of similarities in the way that the characters act in a lot of cases.
They act differently?
Because no, it feels in a lot of cases, a lot of the situations feel very Hitori Bochi-ish.
But no, this is kind of one of those shows where I
just half wait for one of them to say Bochi does.
Oh yeah. It would be often in the framing and stuff, which I can kind of see that softness definitely kind of transitions over to it. But this is kind of one of those shows where I like it more than I thought I would. It's got a very wholesome feel to it. Very cute. I love Elda. I think she's super cute. I love her reactions to things, getting overexcited about like random boxes that you can buy online in Japan, which I despise even the idea of even doing that. Like real life gacha boxes just to try to get the one right toy that you want. I'm like, no.
I'm glad that is not a thing here. You know, let's stop with the online game thing.
I think I've seen it in like Happy Meals at some point, but yeah, that's just something I don't want to become a popular thing. And please. I know it's big over there. I've even considered buying some from AmiAmi at some point because it was for some show that I liked, but I'm like, no, I can't do it. And then like, this is a whole culture. There's even other secondhand shops where you can buy a complete set and stuff for like a whole bunch more. It's scary. It's a scary thing. But anyways, it's just cute. I love seeing her reaction, her overexcitement about things like bottles and stuff. And then going through this big long explanation about, you don't realize how cool it is that you guys have glass jars that have this much curvature and stuff. She's been collecting them for a long time because she loves seeing the evolution of glass making and stuff like that. Has her own little, she just opens up a closet and just brings out this little tray that has a bunch of random bottles on it.
With the poor rooster that doesn't have his head attached for whatever reason.
It's just kind of goofy and charming in that way. Honestly, when I first came to the show, my biggest fear was that it was going to be Amaro-chan, which I know a lot of people love Amaro-chan. It just didn't click for me, and I just didn't really like that idea of the gremlin that eats food all the time, little snack gremlin. It didn't fit me like it did other people, where they're like, this is my spirit animal. But I guess it works a lot better because I just love, like, Elda's, like, demeanor. She's just very kind of, I don't want to do this. And they go out to go do the shrine ceremony to welcome Koito into being the shrine maiden and stuff. And she's just kind of like, there's 50 million layers on. She just doesn't want to be a part of it. And so she's like slowly walking around with them. It gets super charming when it starts to get into the locals and how much the locals adore Elda, despite the fact that none of them really see her. They just know that she's always there and she's always taking care of them. And so it's one of those things that almost takes the realm of something that a lot of people would question if even being real. Why is this shrine here? There's no goddess in here or anything. But kind of giving a grounded level, despite the fact that nobody really even sees her. It kind of gives it that element that people still believe in her, despite the fact that it's not necessarily something that most people would believe even exists because they don't see it. And I love that aspect. It gets a really charming nature to the... It does so well, I guess, in kind of creating a neighborhood rather than just these two characters or these three characters. It makes it kind of a community out of the story, for the earlier segments at least. And they started introducing the other characters, and Koito struggles with dealing with such a seemingly selfish Elda, and trying to appease her, and how she buys all this stuff and she has a limited budget and people are sending her VR sets when they have to do a ceremony. It has really cute moments. My only negative that I really have is that, and it's not a negative to the show, so don't get me wrong. My only negative that I have personally is that I feel there's a lot of jokes I'm missing. They get into a lot of culture references and stuff like that. Like I mentioned, the person that summoned her, I recognize the name, but I don't know who it is.
Oh, he's one of the...
He's pops one of the generals. Up. Huh?
He's one of the generals of...
But it's one of those...
The big guy.
It's just... Yeah, the big guy. It's one of those concepts that, like I said, I see it, I know it's important, but at the same time, I personally missed the reference. And I know based on that, like I said, I knew it was an important person that I recognized. I just didn't get the full context. And I knew based on that, that everything else is probably references that I'm missing. And so it's kind of one of those ones where you might need a little bit of knowledge to get all the jokes. But despite that, I still enjoy a lot of the show. And I do get a lot of the references, like the gacha boxes and a lot of other stuff they're kind of bringing up. So it still has plenty in there that I'm enjoying, despite the fact not knowing a bunch of references. So it's super cute in that regard, and I've been enjoying it a lot. So I definitely suggest it if you're looking for just a cute show, very wholesome, very laid back, cute little comedy within there with a really cute elf girl. So, or not really girl. It does have an elf girl, which Yord. I haven't met her yet. Oh. Elf lady that is Elda. So
I'm sorry. I guess he is the first shogunate.
There you go. First shogunate. There you go.
I thought he was... Oh, yeah. He is one of the generals of Oda Nobunaga. I thought he was.
Taku Elf. Magical Destroyers is our next one. Maho Shoujo Magical Destroyers. This one is by Bidbury Studios, which I think is on Crunchyroll. I didn't put down. I think it is Crunchyroll. Let's check the information wall. Yes, it is Crunchyroll. This is an original done by Bidbury Studios. Genre is pretty much magical girl. And I would put comedy in there and other crazy stuff too. So, being directed by Hiroshi Ikihata, who did Tonikawa, Furikuri Progressive, which is... I don't know. I haven't watched Progressive, so I don't know if it's as crazy as the original Furikuri, but it would explain a lot if it is.
Yeah, what was I telling you that when you were asking me if I watched it? It felt like Furikuri, so...
There you go. I think a lot of people were kind of just saying this is like a wannabe Trigger show, which it definitely feels kind of inspired by Trigger. But yeah, being created by Jun Inagawa and written by Daishiro Tanimura, who did work with Jinobuchi on Gargantuan Virtuous Planet light novel. So And this one opens up in Japan, and at some point, this group pretty much decided to take all things away from mankind that is otaku culture. So anything that people would be obsessed with for a hobby or something like that, where it's video games, visual novels, anime, anything that could be an otaku can be of, which is just an obsession with one thing. And as they took it all away, under the pretense that they're trying to protect the people, they locked up all the otaku and put them inside of trains and locked them up in jail and just pretty much destroyed all the buildings that had anything to do with otaku culture in it. So, well, with all this happening, come rising a hero named Otaku Hero, and he decides that he's going to fight back against the system and reclaim otaku culture back from them. And he was early on joined by three magical girls, Anarchy, Blue, and Pink. When the first episode opens up, Blue has been captured, and Pink went missing, and so all he had was Anarchy. He was about to give up, but Anarchy kind of gave this speech and stood up there to claim that she'll take over if he won't do it, and that inspired him to, you know, rise back up and try to fight back. They go off and they get Blue back, then they have to go recruit Pink, and yeah, just crazy shenanigans happens as they battle against the bad guys that are trying to take away all otaku culture. Did you get a chance to watch it? I guess you did, because you said it feels like Furikuri.
Yep, it feels like Furikuri. And one thing that everybody knows about Chris is Chris does not like Furikuri. So, unfortunately, this show just doesn't work for me. I don't want to bash it. It just doesn't work for me. I got to where they got Pink back, and I still didn't like it. So
there you go. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I will admit, I'm going to say firsthand, I've been my first impressions on the first two episodes. Really, really loved it. I have my misgivings of the third episode, but so far, what I've watched, the first two episodes were fantastic. Really did love it. Haven't got a chance to watch the fourth episode yet. Was really happy to see Joni Tagawa, who is the creator, actually tweeted out my video saying that it was the best review that he's seen. So that was a huge, that was definitely humbling. Was just elated by that whole thing. Super happy. But yeah, I will still say that I think the third episode was a little bit of a drawback for me, but I think the main core thing that I love so much about the series is that it's pretty much, like I put in my thumbnail for my video, like a middle finger from the otaku culture to anybody else, to society itself. As it really does feel like it's kind of that aspect of, it obviously has that element of censorship and taking away what people enjoy, how society, certain groups might feel like people that love something too much is a stain upon society and they need to correct people to make them be some sort of, you know, more productive to the world itself. It not necessarily, it seems like it's trying to say that like a lot, but it's doing very well in the idea of presenting that as the main concept within it, people taking away with the things that you enjoy. And then the reverse is just, again, destroy it. Be as bombastic and crazy otaku as you possibly can get in presentation while you take back the thing that you enjoy. Which is one of the reasons why I love the third episode, despite it not being my favorite, is the idea that in that one is showing the concept of somebody still having the love of cars, being a car otaku, and kind of resolving the issue using a car otaku that's just kind of jumping out there crazy-like. It like I said, at its heart, it feels like this is just unapologetic, raunchy, over-the-top, this is otaku culture. We're going to be as crazy as possible, and we're not going to apologize for it because it's a thing that we love and we want to just be crazy and have fun with it. We want to enjoy the things that we enjoy. While at the same time, like I said, mostly in those first two episodes, not so much the third episode, presenting it in the most bombastic way possible with this crazy animation, especially the second episode. The whole situation with going after Pink, and they have to take this pill, and it goes into her mind, and it's just this twisted, bizarre inner world of Pink, and it's just morbid, and it's got references for different anime in there. Like, there was an obvious reference of Evangelion in there. It was over the top, getting attacked by a mass of body pillows and stuff. It's super crazy, and like I said, doesn't apologize for any of it. It gets raunchy at times, it gets vulgar, and these characters don't care, and I love it for that. I love that pure hard nature of the otaku culture, just being unwilling to kind of step aside. And I think it, like I said, while it doesn't seem like it's trying to say, hey, let us preach to you that we want to be otaku and let us be who we are, it's fun in its portrayal of I don't care and I want to fight back kind of thing. So I love it for that. I think Anarchy's a lot of fun. Blue, for me, doesn't really work too much because she's just very promiscuous and just not the thing for me. Pink's okay. She's just weird. What? I haven't really got much out of her besides Gabu Gabu Gabu.
Yeah, I was going to say, you love Gabu Gabu Gabu?
Pink pretty much speaks through Blue, so I guess Blue is an extension of Pink. Gabu Gabu. And they started introducing another character at the end of the third episode, so I'm curious to see what they end up doing with that. But like I said, it's just fun. It's fun. It's unapologetic. It's wild. It's got, at least again, for the first two episodes, really good animation. I hope that it kind of picks back up with the fourth episode. There's like a commonality in this season, so I kind of have to say something, and I don't mean ill will by it. I'm getting a little tired of people saying it's bad on purpose. I'm tired of the bad on purpose thing. But whatever. There's like two shows this season that have like this stain in it, like Kamikatsu with the ugly CGI bowl. Everybody's saying it's bad CG on purpose. And I'm like, no, it's the manga doesn't indicate any way, shape, or form that it looks different than everything else. The art style is the same in the manga. So unless the studio is taking some liberties and you have a message from the director themselves saying that, it's not the case. And the third episode of this one, no, I don't think it was lacking animation on purpose. So, but that's just my opinion. You know, we all have those. We all have one thing. Anyways. That's Magical Destroyers. Looking forward to more of it. But yeah, it's fun. I love it. So next, we have Mashle. Are you excited to talk about Mashle, Chris?
Sure.
One Punch Man of the season. Mashle is... Was it Madhouse that's doing it? I really need to get these prepared before we start talking about them. Mashle, Magic and Muscles, streaming on Crunchyroll, being done by Studio A1 Pictures. The source is manga. The genres are action, comedy, fantasy. This one, I believe on the website, they said at some point that they were going to be doing a full adaptation. So we'll see how that turns out. So a lot of people are saying it's a lot of episodes, so maybe there's going to be multiple seasons. But for now, I've watched four, I think, maybe five episodes. I don't remember. I got to the point where they were starting to do the broom. The Harry Potter broom match thing, because there's a lot of inspiration here from Harry Potter, obviously. But it opens up with a guy named Mash, and he's in a world where everybody's blessed with magic, and magic's a normal thing. They use it to do anything. You know, if you need to move something, you're using magic. If you want to create something, you're using magic. It's just magic is an everyday thing that people commonly use. But Mash doesn't have magic capability. He doesn't even have a mark on his face. Everybody has a mark on their face, and it's a good indication you don't have magic if you don't have a mark on your face. But he's being taken care of in a forest by his grandpa that basically found him when he was young, discarded on the side of the street. And he knew that Mash wasn't going to have any magic power, and he was criticized his entire life for the fact that he didn't know how to use magic well. So he decides to take care of Mash secluded in a forest. Well, the problem is that Mash out there, and he's being pretty much told to constantly be working out. So he's constantly out there lifting bars and getting super strong. And he's told to never go to the town because obviously he doesn't know magic, but he doesn't tell Mash that. He just says, don't go to the town. Well, Mash has a love for cream puffs. So he decides to go to the town when his grandfather was out, runs to the town, goes to buy some cream puffs. His hood falls down, so people notice that he doesn't have a mark on his face. He's stopped by some kind of police officers to look at him and figure out what's going on. And he gets kind of darted off by his grandpa. Well, these police officers, whatever, find out where he's at in the forest, go to confront him. And that's where we find out that the reason why the world has this sense that everybody has magic is because anybody that doesn't have magic is disposed of. They get rid of them. They want to keep the sense that the world is full of magic and everybody has magic. So it's kind of their way of keeping down those that don't. So after they try to dispose of Mash, and he pretty much uses his brute strength to pretty much deflect all attacks and dribble him on the ground, the guy that's pretty much trying to take him out, Brad, he proposes to Mash that, you know, he wants him. He can either run away with his grandfather, and they keep chasing after them, or Mash can go to this university and become like this prestigious class of members and become popular enough that he can gain the fame and whatever and this status that comes with a lot of money, and then he gets that money. And so Mash, not wanting to constantly flee and take care of his grandfather, decides to go along with it. And so he joins the university, despite the fact that he doesn't have magic. It's a university of magic. So it kind of turns this whole thing where they're presented with these obstacles and tasks and tests that all sort of involve magic, using magic of some sort, and Mash sort of having to figure out a way of doing that without using magic. So, yeah, if he needs to be on a broom and they want them to fly on the broom, he will so fast chuck the broom, run and sprint to it and jump back on it that everybody thinks that he just flew because he did it so fast, or kick his feet so fast that he literally floats in the air. So that's the shtick. But your thoughts?
So a musclehead goes to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and magic. What do I think
One
of
Punch
it?
Man goes. Saitama
one,
goes
One
to
Punch
it.
Man goes there. No, I don't know. The musclehead jokes are not really hitting for me. I mean, I will probably give this a few more episodes. I'm going into it more on a just general curiosity aspect more than anything. Not necessarily because of anything in particular is driving me to watch this show, because my interest in level in it really kind of hit the floor when he kicked up the broom is really what happened. About that point, I everything in me that had any desire of watching the show kind of just dropped.
That was your camel's back?
Yeah, that was the camel's back.
Stomping the ground?
Him stomping the ground and picking up the freaking broom because he couldn't do Asciente.
Levioso, however.
Levioso, yeah.
Did I just call out the actual term that you did?
I think Levioso is picking up small things. I thought Asciente was...
Okay, never mind. Just continue.
I don't remember. It's been a long time.
Sorry. I don't want to get into
it. It's been a long time. But no, I did get a kick out of the almost, we had a moment with, one of the rich kids. I was trying to remember when Andrew had asked me before about it, and I could Malfoy, I was sitting here and I told Andrew, I just went into this whole big old long rant about, how they were trying to do this, this Malfoy reference. And I did get a chuckle out of the fact of him digging a hole in the ground and saying, you can throw me out of this school at any point, but I can also bury you at any point. And this kind of interplay between the two of them, I did get a chuckle out of. That was the highlight of the entire, you're saying that was a whole four episodes. I didn't realize I had watched four episodes, but if I watched four episodes, that was my highlight of the entire series, was that one moment. That says a lot. Everything else I did not much care for. Like I said, there is this odd curiosity, and probably more because of the Hogwarts or the Harry Potter references that they're doing, that they're not even hiding the fact that they're doing this stuff. They're just, it's right there in front of your face. And I do get a kick out of that. And that's about as much as I'm getting out of this show, is that they're referencing, Harry Potter. That's the only thing that I'm getting a kick out of, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the big the trouble that I have, is that I obviously see, and I'm like, literally, I could care less about Harry Potter. I was never a fan of it. I watched maybe one and a half movies. I liked it for what it was, but it never really clicked for me. And I can, even from my perspective, I can see that this is obviously has a lot of inspiration, or even is just being a parody of Harry Potter playing through. That's probably what it's doing, is just going for, we're going to be One Punch Man Harry Potter. Not a joke. It's literally what it is. Because Mash is pretty much Saitama. He's very plain faced. He's very emotionless. He does get angry. He is protective, but he doesn't just shout from the rooftop, or he doesn't laugh or anything like that. He just kind of is just there, blank faced, and does things. I obviously see the inspiration of One Punch Man even further than the idea that there's literally one shot where the cream puff hits his face and he literally looks like Mob Psycho. Like, this guy obviously loves the work of one? Yeah, one. The mangaka one. He obviously likes this person's work. He draws a lot of inspiration with his art style, with a lot of that stuff. You can even look at, I don't even know if it's his artwork or if somebody else posted it, but if you look at like AnyList or something like that and look at the mangaka, his profile pic on there is what looks like Helmet, Lord Helmet or whatever, not Lord Helmet. the depiction of Mob from Mob Psycho 100 when everybody was trying to find the helmet guy. It looks like that. So obviously, again, he draws inspiration there, which is fine. My problem is that I'm not a huge fan of One Punch Man, and I'm not a huge fan of Harry Potter. And so when I feel like this is kind of a mixture of the two of those, going for a parody Harry Potter with One Punch Man character, it doesn't work for me. A lot of the humor, unfortunately, doesn't work for me. And I think this is one of those shows where it's just going to make or break based on you liking the humor. People that find this humorous, you're not bad for liking finding it humorous. As usual, comedy subjective. Some people can find a lot of the Muscle Man type of humor that goes with MASH. I do get a kick out every now and then of the... A lot of the jokes seem to be kind of predicated on, do this spell, everybody. And then everybody's doing it, and he's over there going, well, how can I do this with my muscles? Like the broom reference. He doesn't use a spell to lift the broom. He kicks the ground, it comes up, and he grabs it. Or everybody's flying around in this competition on broomsticks, and he literally just starts kicking his feet really fast so he can fly. I sort of have inside me, like, that's kind of funny, but I never really chuckle or anything at it. It's just kind of, okay, that was a lot of build-up to this punchline. Which, again, is very similar to One Punch Man. Which, that was pretty much One Punch Man for quite a bit for the first part, was build up this organization, how bad the organization is. He shows up and punches once. It's all a build-up to the joke at the very end. And it, if it doesn't work, I feel like I've wasted most of the previous time. I don't have a problem with any of the characters. I'm not a huge fan of MASH, but I think he's a cool guy. He's good. He's a good boy in the end. I'm not mad at him or anything like that. But he's also not entertaining at the same time. So it's just, unfortunately, nothing here is really working for me. And again, I think that's a lot to do with the fact that for me personally, the humor doesn't work. But I think if you watch the first episode, I'd probably say give it two episodes, because you start to get an actual what he's doing with the school and everything like that in the second episode.
The whole first
episode is not really an indication of the rest of the show.
Yeah. The whole first episode was literally getting him into the Dagum school. So you need to know what his interaction with the school is going to be. And that's going to be in... It might be episode three.
But yeah, it's fine though. It's not that it's a bad show, and I probably will keep watching it, but I don't have like huge hopes for it at this point. So it looks good though, and the music's really good. They got vocals and stuff in the music, so they got some solid music in there. I wouldn't say that it always matches the show itself, but it's kind of got that little get you going as things start to build up kind of thing. Even though MASH is just sitting there with no expression, it's like this hype music playing and he's just kind of like, okay, I'm gonna dribble the magic. I did out loud chuckle one time in the show, and that was when he started dribbling on the ground the ball of magic, and the guy's like, what is he really doing this? He's just dribbling around the guy. There you go. That's Mashal. Rokudo's Bad Girls. Are you ready, Chris?
Actually, I am.
You ready to talk about some Rokudo's Bad Girls? This one is Rokudo no Onatachi, streaming on... Oh my gosh, I forgot to write down the service again. It's probably Crunchyroll. I'm going to assume it's Crunchyroll. It is Crunchyroll. Studio is Satellite. The source is a manga. The genres are action, comedy, drama, romance, supernatural. I guess supernatural, yeah, because the spell. I was like, wait, what? Supernatural? The curse? The curse, Andrew. I'm like, where's a ghost? Is there a ghost? There will probably be a ghost bad girl at some point. Gotta be. Gotta be a probably. Bad ghost girl. Anyways, if we're going in the realms of, like...
He's gonna get the devil to join.
If we're going in the realm of exorcists and stuff like that, and spirit stuff, it's gotta be. Anyways. But yes, it follows a guy named Tosuke Rokudo. And Rokudo is constantly pretty much the beating post of his classmates, or mainly this one group of bullies led by Haruya. And Haruya pretty much on a daily basis, like, takes his lunch from him and then throws it at Rokudo, and he has to catch it in midair with his mouth. Otherwise, he loses his lunch for the day. They're really mean to him. And the kind of thing that keeps him going is him and his two buddies. They'll often kind of get together and talk about how they dream of the day that they'll have that wonderful school experiments. School, yeah, you know, having fun, going to school, maybe meeting girls and all that kind of stuff. They, you know, go out of their way to, once again, I have to appreciate it, explain that thighs are good. but yeah, as they're, you know, doing their daily, I don't know if it's daily, but they do this little session where they'll go to Rokudo's place and they'll hang out together and play video games and kind of restore their vitality by playing video games together. Well, he got a package from his grandfather, and in the package is a scroll, and it says something to the effect that, hey, Rokudo, you're in danger. Use the scroll. And so he's like, I don't even know what the scroll is. It looks old. And then it suddenly activates and it puts this mark on his forehead. And after that point, every bad girl that he runs into likes him and goes out of his way to help him. So you have him like walking to school, and then this random thug guy shows up and starts beating him up. And then suddenly the thug guy's girlfriend's like, leave him alone. It's okay. Let the guy go. And then it's like, okay, well, that's weird. And he goes to the class, and one of the members of Haruya's, not just one of the members of Haruya's group, Haruya's girlfriend is literally telling them to stop being mean to him. Come to find out later on, she even turned her wallpaper on her phone to a picture of Rokudo, so obviously she has a thing for him now. And that extends to this random thug girl that's walking the neighborhood that doesn't even go to the school, that just seeks out fighting people. She runs into Rokudo and falls in love with him and then starts going to his school. I think they kind of imply that she goes there.
She just never showed up.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of the shtick, is Rokudo gets, you know, beat up by thugs, and now all the thugs' girlfriends like him. So get in the way. And yes, this Himawari is like super strong. And, yeah, your thoughts?
I went into this. We both had
the same thoughts about the preview. We watched the preview. It looked ugly. Let's get that out of the way. It looked ugly. Didn't like it.
I went in. I was like, I even put off.
In the preview, didn't we say that, I don't know if it was you or me, didn't we say that watch this be the gem of the season? Like, it's just going to end, it'll have something in it that makes it really great.
I put off going into it because I really didn't want to see the...
I'm going to like it. I don't want to watch it.
And sure enough, I think Andrew had said something, it spurred me. I was like, okay, I got to stop putting it off. I went and I watched it and I was like, damn it. I like it. Dang it. Dang it. Dang it. Dang it. And I did. I absolutely love the show. It works so perfectly for me. I'm not sure about the police girl right now, but I'm sure it'll probably work out when everything is said and done. Because it does all these moments in this really perfectly wholesome way that just works for this show. And I really love it for the way it's doing it. I mean, it's like, Osanada is not necessary. She's a bad girl, but she's not really wanting to be a bad girl, but she ends up being a bad girl because of the way that things are around her. But she's not all that she's out to be. And Rokudo sees that in her. I can't wait until we get into
Himawari.
I can't wait to get into Blondie. I'm not sure that Yano-kun, I necessarily liked how easily he flipped, but I'm okay with it because I do like the fact that he acknowledged him for standing up, whether or not he was strong enough to stand up against him. I do kind of like that. I kind of wish that they had gotten a little bit more into his mindset, but...
You're starting to slowly touch on like probably my biggest issue with the show.
Go ahead.
It feels like most of the things are solved by Rokudo becoming a punchbag, and I really don't like those kind of characters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like the Tokyo Revengers character. It's the type of character that they are not strong. They acknowledge they're not strong, which is fine. It's fine for a character not to be strong, but they don't usually solve an issue by thinking it through really well. It always kind of just turns into, I'm going to go in there and get beat up a bunch, and eventually people will either acknowledge me for being strong because I'm getting beat up, or they'll just give up and leave. But I like at least that at some point he just kind of acknowledges, you know, it's not so much that he always relies on him getting beat up to solve a problem, but it's more of a, I'm sorry, Himawari. I have to use you. Like, it, I like the fact that he's perfectly fine with going, yeah, he doesn't want her fighting. He kind of has in his mindset this idea of, you know, I have to, the guy has to protect the girl, right? But then at some point he realizes, I can't. So I might as well ask her, can you do this for me? And she does it because she's going to do anything for him. I'd be really interested to find out some point. Wouldn't it be an interesting twist that Himawari isn't actually affected by the curse?
I thought it crossed my mind. It would be kind of cool if she actually wasn't a bad girl.
Yeah, she's actually a good girl. She's always beaten at the bad guys. That means she's a good girl, right?
Well, they're implying that the police girl is
I haven't seen the police girl yet.
Yeah, she's technically an Avenger or a
Avenger type. Yeah,
like yeah, an Avenger type,
Batman type character.
Yeah, there's a term for it, and I can't think of it. Anyway, yeah, an Avenger.
Yeah. Yes.
Vigilante,
yeah. The style has grown on me. I call it the aspect that you watch it long enough and eventually you're like, I just don't care anymore, or you get used to it kind of thing. I still don't like the style to it. I do like the kind of older aesthetic to it. There is a little bit of it that feels kind of an older style, like an old 80s, 90s anime type of style to it. It's got a little bit of a feel or a style in there. And it sort of has that same feel with the concepts itself. It feels very school, the old type of anime that you just had of school and a bunch of kids that are beating up on each other. And then you have the turf wars that are happening within it. People having to fight to you know, rule the school or whatever. It's got that old feel in there. Overall, though, I think this show is kind of one of those ones where first episode was like, okay, this is fine. I'm perfectly fine with this show. It's got a decent little chuckle here and there. It's got an interesting concept in there with the whole girls coming after him. He even acknowledges the idea that he sort of feels bad that he's technically he's affecting these girls. Like they normally wouldn't be after him, and suddenly he is causing them to change, and he feels wrong about that. And that extends to Osanada. And Osanada was the big hook. That was the thing that I pushed Chris, you got to watch the show because they did something really interesting with this. If you have a spell that's bringing in all the cute, you know, the bad girls to you, and then suddenly you run into this one girl that seems like she's not affected by it, but she's sort of affected by it, gives the indication that, okay, she just doesn't understand love. She is a bad girl, but she doesn't understand love. And so he doesn't want to ruin her first love. So it's the concept of, I will make her a good girl so that she doesn't fall in love with me. And I was kind of afraid that would just be a punchline for the next episode, which just kind of does. Kind of wraps it up very quickly. I almost thought that was going to be like a through line. They're going to keep messing with that. But it at least showed me a sign that they're going to mix it up. It's not going to just be bad girl shows up. Bad girl likes him. Guys are mad that bad girl likes him and not them. And fights happen. He gets himself beat up a bunch, which is still kind of happening. But it was enough in there that I was like, okay, this is a kind of an interesting concept to give this. It's got an interesting little twist here. I'm kind of interested to see how this goes forward. And then you have characters like Tsuyakasa, or whatever her name is, the normal girl in the school. it kind of implies that she likes Rakudo. It'd be interesting to find out if it's a thing where she has a bad side to her, or if it's just that she's always liked him and she's actually normal. Would be interesting to see as well. It's absurd. It's got some moments in it. I won't oversell it to anybody, but I will admit that I'm pleasantly surprised by it, and I do kind of want to watch more of it, despite the fact that I hate how it looks. I like I said, most of it's kind of grown on me, but there is still times where I'm like, I just don't like how this looks. I wish this was different. But yeah, it's a solid watch. If the concept tickles your ears, if it doesn't, just don't bother, because it's probably not going to be good for you. I feel like I'm overselling it. Don't expect too much. It's got a goofy concept, so yeah. The Cafe Terrace and its goddesses, or Megami no Cafe Terrace. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Tezuka Productions, based on a manga, comedy, ecchi romance. This one follows. Yes.
I need to go and get caught up.
Missing out. This one follows Hayato Kasukabe, who decides, or he gets noticed that his grandmother had passed away, and so he's going back to his hometown. I think it was grandmother. It might be his mother. I think it's his grandmother. She's too old. It's hard to tell in anime. I think it was his grandmother. Yeah, it's grandmother. She passed away, and she left pretty much her place to him, which is pretty much a cafe that's attached to, like, a living space. And so he goes back there to kind of, you know, clear things out. His plans, upon hearing this news, was that he was going to tear down the entire place and just rent it off as a parking lot, make a lot more money that way, because, as we find out, pretty much his entire young life, when he was being taken care of by his grandmother, who he did love, she was constantly trying to keep the place afloat. And it got to the point where she was having to take loans and stuff, and these rough guys would show up on a regular basis that was kind of treating her terribly. He didn't like the whole situation, so he's just going to just get rid of it, turn into a parking lot, make more money that way, get better investment on his money, go back to college because he's currently going to college at the time. He was planning on going to college so that he would get a good job that would be able to help his grandmother, kind of pay her back and everything. But again, she kind of passed away while he was in school. So, and when he arrives, he kind of find out, as you do in a harem ecchi show, he comes in there and immediately every single girl for some reason is currently changing her butt naked. And so he ends up seeing all of them naked and then says, "Get out. This is, you know, my grandmother left this to me. Get out of here. You know, you can no longer live here," even though they're all staying there and working at the cafe and everything. So he kicks them out. But then they come back in there because their whole plan is that they want to essentially talk him into, you know, keeping, well, they kind of find out later on that he's going to tear it down, but they want to stay there. So they'll work there and take care of the place just to keep that place for them to stay, because none of them can afford to live anywhere else. They have nowhere to go. So, yeah, so they proceed to try to do any method possible to talk him into it, either by coercing him with food, coercing by taking care of him, putting on their charms. They even get one of the girls inebriated, and because apparently when she gets inebriated, she gets a little bit interested. Yeah, frisky. That's a good way to putting it. She gets a little frisky, and so they were planning on having her go up there and get into bed with him and then take pictures of him. But yeah, that's kind of the opening. And then at some point, he decides that he's going to keep the place open. He's going to take a little more time off of school than he was planning on. He's going to put all of his investments into rebuilding the shop, reopen it, and see if it works. So, because one of the girls brings some of the food that grandmother taught her how to make, and that re-sparks memories of how much effort she put into keeping the cafe open, and he wants to kind of keep that legacy going, so... Yeah, a bunch of people that all seem to hate each other living in one place and working together trying to revive a cafe. All the while, ecchi scenes happen once an episode because you have to get that in there every now and then. Yeah. I'm just going to be brutally honest. I don't like this show at all. And it's mainly because I just don't like any of the characters. I hate everybody in this show. Let's start off with Hayato. Let's go down the list of characters. We have the main protagonist character, Hayato Kasukabe. He's not terrible, but he is kind of a jerk. He's kind of normal in a sense, because it's just like, okay, lost my grandmother. I'm going to get rid of this place. He's got those ties of memories. Girl sparks those ties of memories. It was a little cute in that regard, but he's kind of a jerk. There's ways that he can go about doing what he's doing that's in a less nasty way, but he just chooses to be the nastiest possible. But at the same time, I don't blame him, because we get into the other girl. We get into the girls of the character, because we get into the girls. Start off with Oka Makuzawa. She is pretty much the poster girl. She's the one that has the long hair. It's kind of the neutral tsundere type character. She's probably the least offensive out of all of them, but she is kind of just nasty in a sense. They're all kind of nasty in some way, except for probably Kuku-chan. But yeah, she's obviously the one that has a deeper tie in with Hayato. We'll probably find out later that they're childhood friends of some sort later on. Akane, she's probably the only one that I actually like. let me correct myself. I actually like Akane. She's not a total jerk. She's not nasty. She's kind of just to herself. At the same time, just kind of giving advice to Hayato. I think she's probably the only one I can kind of stomach in the entire show. Riho, she's okay. I did kind of like her episode where essentially he's got to procure resources to run the shop. He's going to have to make ties with a brewery or a roasting company to get for the coffee. They're going to have to get vegetables locally. So they got to go around the neighborhood and kind of say, "Hey, look, the cafe is open again. We appreciate your support. want to be able to buy stuff from you. And he's terrible at really kind of communicating to anybody, which doesn't make any sense. It's like he just goes there and just stares blankly at everybody, which makes no sense. But he does that in order to shine that she knows how to communicate with people, and so she's going to help him out. So I guess she's okay. Ami, she's just the violent character. Whenever somebody thinks that Hayato's doing something, which in most cases he's not, she comes in and drop kicks him out of the room. Like the whole situation with Cuckoo, when they got her inebriated and she went up into his bedroom, she opens the door and kicks the crap out of him because she's the violent physical type. And she breaks things because she's kind of ditzy. She's not terrible, but at the same time, she's just the violent person to put into the picture to beat the crap out of the main character. And Cuckoo's just there. I guess she's fine, too. So I guess I don't hate all of them, but I hate them. I just hate the chemistry. Positives. I will say that when it gets kind of into the grandmother and the relationship of the girls with her and his relationship with the grandmother, you get a sense of family, which is kind of there in the midst of just really obnoxious characters that all want to tear each other's throats out. So that's kind of the one ray of sunshine in there. Having that point of realization for Hayato and wanting to actually run the cafe was decent. I kind of want to see where it goes from here and how they can keep the cafe open and the troubles they're going to run into. But I think, unfortunately, I got a little bit of a sign of it early on that I'm not really necessarily thinking it's going to be an enjoyable experience, because their first day having the cafe open, you have to have the thug guy that once was, you know, being terrible to the grandmother showing up, and they don't want to make a spectacle of telling him to get the heck out. But then he has to, of course, you know, rip up one of the girl's skirts just to kind of see under them, and they toss him out. It's just, I don't know. I can admit that, again, recalling, I don't necessarily like this writer. I don't think I've ever really liked any of their works with, like, Fuka, A Town Where You Live, Suzuka. I've tried all of them, and I don't necessarily like them. But I still keep trying his works, hopefully eventually get a story that I do enjoy. But I think that's probably where it kind of comes down to, is I just maybe don't like this writer's way of writing characters. Either them being too nasty to the point where it's comical, or throwing in tragedies where it just kind of doesn't fit. And I think that's probably where I'm falling in, is the idea that I just don't like how this writer portrays drama. It doesn't feel natural in most cases. It just feels like it's trying too hard. So I'll give it a little bit longer. Obviously, I always try to give everything a shot, but not liking it so far. Just, I really don't. Besides Akane. Akane is, she's about the only good girl. But yeah, there you go. That's a Cafe Terrence, and it's goddesses, if you want to call them goddesses. I'm joking. Let's move on to Tonikawa. Tonikaku Kawaii Season 2, Chris, it's back. Of course, those that don't know, follows a guy named Nasa, and he's got a really terrible name, so he decides that he's going to essentially get so smart and make so many achievements that he can overcome that, and so he gets really good grades, has really grand desires for his schooling. And then one day, while he is walking home from school, he ends up seeing this very beautiful girl, wants to go talk to her, gets hit by a truck. Come to find out, the girl jumped out there to kind of soften the blow and protect him from the truck. So they're both kind of doing bad. And she walks off, and he needs to go to hospital, but he ends up chasing after her. Confesses that he wants to go out with her, and she's like, okay, well, if you marry me, that's fine, I'll do it. It's like, okay, I'll marry you. And then he collapses and passes out. Cut forward a little bit of time, and she shows up at his place and says, okay, I'm here, let's get married. And he's like, oh, you're the girl from before. Oh, so you really do want to get married. Why do you want to marry me? Well, he said the same thing. So they end up getting married, and then thus begins their life together and exploring the wonders of being married. So did you get a chance to watch Season 2 yet?
No.
I thought you'd be on this.
I will be.
I thought you'd be on this.
I will absolutely
Andrew,
be on this.
Andrew, the guy that keeps bashing the show, watched it, Kristen. No, I knowing this season two, well, I, history lessons.
Did you go back and finish the first
Andrew
season?
Watched a little bit of the first season. Wasn't clicking. Then knowing the season two was coming out, I'm like, I'll just give it another shot. I was in the middle of a bunch of projects, so I thought, okay, I'll just watch it, see if it clicks for me this time. Spoiler, long story short, didn't. And so I'm like, okay, well, since I already watched the first season and completed it. Let's see if season two works. And it's pretty much the same thing, which is a good thing for those that love the first season. Know full well, second season's more of the first season. But for Andrew, who didn't really like the first season at all, second season's not really doing anything for me. Somebody said there's something coming up. I don't know. I might keep watching it to see if something's coming up actually comes up, or if I'm just being trolled and they're telling me that so that I keep watching it. But yeah, I guess it never worked for me. Somebody was like pointed out that the reason why Tonikawa is so great is because it's finally a dithering main character that they just get together. There's no like, will they, won't they? And I'm like, well, it's still a dithering main character. He's just now married. But I think my problem, the way that I describe it to people is it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like the Wile E. Coyote issue, where it's like, yeah, you always want Wile E. Coyote to catch the Roadrunner, but what happens when he actually did finally catch him? He didn't know what to do with it. And I kind of feel like this is the case. Like, this feels like the writer's like, okay, this time, bam, they're married. We're going to do this. Because I think this was the writer of Hayate, right? Because I think they actually had a reference in this recent episode. They showed Hayate the Comet Butler. It's like one of those cases where the writer's like, okay, let me actually do where they actually get together right off the bat. And let's just do it. But it's like that aspect of now they don't know what to do. Like they okay, we got married. Now what? Oh, well, they're married. Okay. They're married. All right. I get it. The first season kind of bugged me the most because it was like an aspect of I was okay with it, but at the same time, it got a little tedious. This idea of Nasa being like superly over like, whoa, 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 whoa. She's right next to me. I can smell her. Oh, I'm touching her. Her skin feels soft. 2 seconds later, I'm touching her. So this is how a girl feels. And I'm like, you just touched her like 2 episodes ago. So how is this a new discovery for you? It was constantly discovery, even though discovery shouldn't be there. And just constantly blushing back and forth, which is cute. And I'm sure a lot of people enjoy that. It just, unfortunately for me, just doesn't really work. And I'm just getting that same stuff in the second season. It's, okay, now NASA's a really cool dude because he's helping fix a vacuum. Already established that Nasa's a cool dude. I agree. Nasa's a cool dude. I'm happy for him to have Tsukasa because he's kind of a cool dude. It's just nothing's happening. It's literally just them living together, fixing stuff. He works. She gives him a massage. They get a list of ways of kissing each other. I'm not getting anything out of the show whatsoever besides here's a sitcom of a married couple exploring each other. It was funny because somebody was implying that one of the OVAs implies that they sleep together, like go and they go all away. And then like, again, we get an episode where they're blushing over kissing each other. And it's like, I don't think they did because why are they going so out of their way to show them being embarrassed about every single thing? Like they've never done it before. And it's kind of agitating in that regard where it always feels like it's the first time, even though it's not their first time. But yeah, it's fine. I see the appeal. Tsukasa's adorable. Nasa's a cool dude, which is kind of a rarity for a lot of shows like this. Honestly, I can give him credit for that. I've loved, again, if this is the writer of Hayate and stuff, I've loved their previous work. This one just, it's not doing enough. The comedy's not there for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of it. I mean, watching the first episode, my main enjoyment was the cutesy getting to know each other thing. It was constantly a Nasa going, oh, well, girls are like this. And that's something new. This is interesting because girl. And I never really looked at it so much as a dither or more closer to I just don't, like Andrew had mentioned, I don't know what to do now that I've got girl right here. What do I do? And it was constantly a how do they take care of each other and learning that aspect. And I always thought that that was really, really cute. And that's what I did enjoy about it.
All right, cool. Tonikawa, Over the Moon for You, second season. Aono Orchestra. Did I make an outline for that? Because I just watched it recently. Did you get a chance to watch?
That was one of the ones that I said I wasn't going to bother.
Because why? It's nowhere. I haven't been able to find anybody that's streaming this show, unfortunately. So it's finding a global version that's released elsewhere that you can clamor onto. Did I not make an outline for it? We're doing it live then. Blue Orchestra opens up with a guy named Aono Hajime, And Hajime, we find out very quickly, he used to play violin. His father was a very famous, not a very famous, just he was a well-known violinist. I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly how famous he was, but he was popular. And at some point in the past, his father got involved with a big scandal. They claimed that he was, I don't know if it was true or not, but they talked about the fact that he got with somebody else, was cheating on his wife, and that completely ruined his career. And that kind of just left him with his mother, obviously divorcing the father, and now they live alone together, and they still have their, like, silent, their padded room with all the instruments and everything, but they kind of keep it locked up because Hajime believes that if he continues playing violin, it's going to dredge up memories to his mother, and he doesn't want to hurt his mother. So he decides to, you know, get rid of violin and everything because his father always wanted to be a violinist, and he just wants to stick it to his old man and, again, not dredge up those memories for his mother. So he's giving it up. As he's going to school, you know, going forward with his studies and everything like that, eventually he starts hearing a really bad violin playing, and he's not really sure if he's hearing things. Eventually start hearing, like, whispers about somebody being in the infirmary again. And eventually one day he gets a ball in his face and he's bleeding out his nose. So he's sent to the infirmary, and that's when he suddenly meets Ritsuko Akane. And Ritsuko is trying to learn violin, and she's terrible at it. And he hears this and he's like, man, you're terrible at this. And then his teacher shows up and says, oh, good, you're both here. Hajime, I want you to teach Ritsuko how to play violin. And he's like, heck no, I'm not doing that. I'm not playing violin anymore. I'm not doing this. And he leaves. Well, come to find out, the teacher actually was somebody that supported Hajime when he was playing violin. Most cases, most people didn't really care, but his teacher was actually, you know, supporting him. And by extension, he really desires for Hajime to get back into playing violin. He loved his violin playing. He wants him to get back into it really badly. And here's somebody that has a lot of passion for it. And so you kind of get a sense that, yeah, he's sort of trying to push them two together because he doesn't want to have to teach her, but also that he wants Hajime to get back into violin. And so it kind of turns this whole thing where at some point Ritsuko, you know, comes to him and say, hey, can you help me fix my violin? They go back to his place. She's like super happy to see this enclosed room that you could actually play violin, because with most Japanese homes, you play instruments at home, you're going to bug your neighbors. But they have like this insulated room that they can play violin in. The main kind of changing point is as they're kind of out next to this river, she starts to play and he knows that she loves playing, and that joy that she has is sort of infectious. We get a story about her backstory and the idea that there's some gossip around her. He notes one day that when he was walking by her classroom, everybody kind of, you know, stood away from her and she was looking really angry. And the assumption was that she was bullying the girls in her class. And we get this little history that at some point years ago, they believed that she was bullying her friend. But in actuality, it was her friend and she was trying to protect her. And everybody misconstrued the situation, blaming her instead of the girls that were actually bullying. And the school didn't do anything about it. The teacher knew that. And so playing violin was sort of her escape from the whole situation. And again, noting that this is something that didn't bog her down from playing violin, she enjoyed it, something that inspired him to want to put aside his history as well and do the thing that he enjoys. She was looking happy, so I want to play violin too. So he picks up the violin, starts playing again. And of course, he's really, really good at it. So that's as far as I've gotten, is getting pretty much both their backstories, her and her situation with kids at school bullying, her friend transferring out, the fact that the school blamed her, the fact that she knows she went on to play violin to kind of get away from that whole thing. And then on the opposite end is him and his history with his father and picking up the violin again. So far, I really like the show. I'm very pleasantly surprised by it. It's a pretty solid setup so far. There's a side of me that's like, I almost want to stop watching now, because I think it was a really solid kind of build up to this change in his life. He accepts the violin once again, and I'm kind of afraid that what after this is just them playing violin together, joining an orchestra or something like that. I'm sort of afraid of what the story will going forward, because it's obviously going to turn into them learning violin together and then probably getting into an orchestra and everything, which I'm not really too interested in. But again, I guess the only thing that really kind of drives me to want to continue watching is because I think the so far the portrayal of these two character stories was solid. I think they're solid, well-wrote characters that have driving force, but at the same time being bogged down by something and overcoming it through just their desire to play music, to play their instrument. And I think, like I said, that part was so well done, it has me hope for what's going forward. Visually, it looks solid. I know that when we watched the previews, the thing that stood out to us was the orchestra and the CGI looked terrible. But, like, so far, no CGI has really been used. And the play of the actual instrument's been really excellent. So there was one part where I think when they handed over the violin, it looked like the hands were CGI, like a little sausage finger thing going on. But so far, it's been very beautiful. And the portrayal of the characters and then playing the music and the smile and everything and how much they enjoyed playing it was well portrayed to me. So
I absolutely love that you kind of put your finger on that aspect that we always worry about. The first three episodes were so good. It has to have been the main story. What do they do after this? And you have this kind of catch 22 of, are they really so good that the rest of the story is that good? Or is the rest of the story because they feel like they have to keep writing something?
That one chapter was really good. Keep writing.
And they don't know what else to do.
No, that was the story. Keep writing. But that was the story. Keep writing. It's selling good. Keep going. No. Okay. Well, they joined an orchestra. Let's go. Let's keep going. It's an obvious fear. And that's always a fear with a lot of stuff. And that's why it's always kind of a thing that we don't typically like is that whole aspect of the three episode rule.
Yeah.
Is that aspect of like, well, that's technically the first few chapters. Yes. That's technically like their idea to start putting pen to paper was probably that. You don't know how much they've thought ahead. That's usually what tells a good story from a bad story is when at some point you realize, man, this is thought out. Somebody had a plan here. And they have – it's scary to think of how much they have planned ahead. It is a 24-episode series too, so this will be going for a while. But yeah, we'll see. What is the rating on the source material, I wonder? It's a manga. 70 average score on the manga. Question mark? Well, the anime is 70 also, so I guess it's going to keep at this pace, I guess. Who cares about ratings on websites? Onimai has got like a 7 point something on Mile. I don't trust anybody no more. But yeah, that's I don't know, Orchestra or Blue Orchestra. Like I said, it's a really solid first two episodes. It's the only sucky part is that it's I don't think it's still available anywhere, and that's probably why most people are probably not going to end up watching it, unless it's available on YouTube. Let's see if YouTube has it, or if it's just... No, there's trailers. There's trailers. That's a bummer. That's a big bummer. Maybe High Dive will eventually pick it up. They've picked up some stuff late, so we'll see. But so far, I'm enjoying it. It's a really solid slice of life. So, we'll see. I got summoned to another world two times or something like that. What was it? Summoned to another world again? Do you remember what it was called? I got summoned to another world a second time. Oh, for a second time, I think is what it was called. Did I make an outline for this one, too? At some point, I just got massively burnt down doing first impressions, and I stopped making outlines. I'm sorry. At some point, I reached the limit, and I couldn't go anymore. We're going to have to do it live again. Did you watch this? Yep. Oh, there it is. There it is. Summoned to another world for a second time. You did?
Uh-huh.
Oh, there you go. You didn't watch Blue Orc? No, I'm joking. Every time he says something over another one, I'm always going to say that. It's just an ongoing joke. Isekai Shokan wa Nidome Dasu.
I went back and I watched the...
you watched 30.
Chilling in my 30s again.
See? Good follow-up. I like that. Touché. Streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, done by Studio Ella or something. I don't know. Light novel. And this follows a guy named Setsu, and he's in school, and at some point, this big circle appears. Him and all of his classmates get transported to a fantasy world with a bunch of weird demon robot armored things coming towards them. Quickly, he realizes, I'm back. While everybody else is going, holy crap, where are we at? And they're all running away. He's like, oh, yeah, okay. And he keeps it kind of – he doesn't really tell anybody, but yes, it indicates that he's been in this world before. And so he flees with all his classmates. They get taken to the kingdom. In the kingdom, the king and the princess pretty much tell them, you're here because you've been summoned from another world. You're going to be heroes for this world. Please save our world. And he quickly kind of darts to the side, ends up running into pretty much all the people that he fought alongside in his previous, you know, incarnation in this world. Apparently 5 years ago, he was battling this one guy, Toma, and then they clashed swords. This big explosion happened, and they both disappeared. And that's apparently when he was brought back to our world, was living a normal life again, and then he got summoned back to it again. So he's like, okay, well, I gotta go find Toma because it's probably Toma. And so he ditches all of his past companions and runs off on his own and traveling across the world to go find Toma. And then he finds this girl that's trying to get this amulet that he recognizes to this demon island. He goes there on the back of a Leviathan lady. They cook a bunch of squid. And then he's told that, what was it, a general or something like that is being controlled by somebody and has to wed somebody. So no, he's got to go stop it.
The demon lord.
Was it the demon lord? I don't think they call it. It might have been
the
her name.
The general said that the demon lord is supposed to be married to a merchant.
Yeah, it's obviously being controlled.
Yeah, so Kirito goes back to Einkrad, smacks one of his harem members on the butt, sits on her, and tells all of his harem members, "Hey, I gotta go to the demon lord's continent." And he picks up more a lolly and more of his harem members, goes back to the demon lord's continent, which is apparently another harem member. This guy's got a lot of harem members that he wants to leave behind. So do we like it? Yes, ish.
Summon back to my harem for a second time.
So, I have harems in the real world and harems in the
but he's isekai. Not hot.
He's not hot.
He's not hot.
He's not fat Kirito who got hot. I don't know. It's fine. It's not really doing anything that's kind of catching me that I'm like, man, I want to watch this one.
Did you have
week.
The same sense when you watched the first episode? It's like, I know this is the first episode, but it feels like I just jumped to the second season.
Yes. It feels like I jumped into the second season.
Like in a sense that it almost feels as if it acts as if you knew this happened. Like when it shows a whole fight with Toma, it's like previously, it's like, who's Toma? Am I supposed to care who this guy is? Like, well, it just assumes, you know, that Setsu's relationship with Toma, and it just kind of goes, okay, I gotta go find Toma.
It is one of those weird aspects of it. It's almost like I'm watching like the final episode, you know,
you're watching a recap.
I kind of like it on the aspect of it feels like an after story, but at the same time, it's not working. I want it to work, but it's not. And
it's just nothing that's happening that's interesting.
Yeah.
He's just traveling.
Exactly.
She's got to get this pendant. They go on the live with Leviathan. They feed dudes sushi. Like I was telling synopsis. That's literally, it's like, it's just nothing's happening. It's sort of like the first episode was decent. Like I like this idea of him being transported with this girl that's obviously into him, and he's re-meeting like Iruka, slapping her butt and sitting on her. And that's how he establishes who he is. And they all kind of accept it. And Tia's like, oh, you're back, Setsu. Like she's the only one that knows it. And Grain, like he has his friend and everything. It's like, and then that, it's just traveling and beating up things and covering up the fact that he doesn't want to tell anybody who he is. Except
and yet he acts like everybody should know. It's like, I don't,
I'll wait until they figure it out. It's suspense.
It feels like it should work in every way, but it's not. And that's the frustrating thing. I kind of like the idea of it being this kind of already established, kind of thing. And it being the after story should work, but it's not. It's not maybe this is the anime industry's way of saying, yeah, you guys really thought you wanted this, but no, you don't really want this. Here, let me show you. And then they're presenting it, and it's like, no, because, you know, I mean, when there was the Aesthetica Rogue or something like that, where it actually worked. That you had this character who is the kind of power trip, but he kind of just flaunted the fact that he was a powerful guy, and all the girls just fell for him, and he loved the fact that he had that. And it so you know it can work, and that was technically an after story type series. So, I mean, it should work, and it's just not. Maybe it's the supporting cast, because Setsu's fine. I don't have a problem with Setsu. The supporting cast so far is just not really pulling his personality out, I guess, maybe.
I can see that. I think it is a lot to do with the supporting cast. It's just not really there. It's just there. It almost feels like a second season, but it's one of those second seasons that's been a while, so they decide to constantly refer to you what happened in the previous season, and you're supposed to get it, and it just doesn't. But yeah. Gundam, The Witch from Mercury, season 2. I'm not going to get too detailed in here because we're in a second
quarter. Does she still like tomatoes?
Yeah.
Everybody wants her to have tomatoes. So yeah. I'm assuming that all she does is walks around with like a box of tomatoes all the time.
No. It's at the garden. It's Mjörn's garden. Like I said, I won't get into too much details here. Pretty much opens up with this idea of this Benerick group. They have all these companies under this one umbrella that all make mobile suits. And there's this other group that's making this Gundam technology to make Gundams. They pass this law to pretty much prevent Gundams from happening. At some point, the institute where they were creating the Gundams gets completely... They pretty much storm in it and kill everybody. And this mother flees with her daughter. They go to Mercury. And then cut forward, they go to the school where the girl returns there with the mobile suit. Everybody freaks out because it's a Gundam. And yeah, this school has duels, which decide everything. There's a lot of political intrigue about the Benerick group itself that runs the school. It's a power struggle, all that kind of stuff, all built into one. First season, loved it. Gundam, really great. Now, Gundam, really great. For a Gundam series, really great. Going into the second season, the first episode, I wasn't sure. I'm like, okay, let's pick up the pace a little bit. We left on a really bad note with the first season. Where are we going to get into now? Second episode, nailed it. It was suddenly like, okay, We're doing it. We're going to reveal. It feels like it revealed everything. Finally, the questions we've been asking for an entire season finally get answered. And it's really building up the overall plot line, which really does feel like the core of what the series is going to be. What this Prospera that has been kind of pulling the strings in the background the whole time, what that means for the Benerick group. The Benerick group seemingly feeling like it's going to fall apart. It really does feel like a massive, massive shift in the leaderships and who's pulling the strings and where the powers is sort of being held by. So really fantastic season so far. Really loving it. Like I said, the second episode was the selling point for me in this new season. And it keeps following it up with another really good episode. So it really does feel like, despite my fears of like, okay, they just laid all the cards on the table. There's nothing left. They keep kind of building up into something. And I'm really excited to see where it goes from here. As much as it's probably going to be, in typical Gundam fashion, probably extremely violent, but we'll see. I don't know. Gundam doesn't always have to be super violent, but it typically is. But yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes from here. So yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. What else we have? Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba. Did you watch the new season yet?
Not yet.
I'm enjoying it. I've said before, said several times, I didn't like the second season. I think the fight scene at the very end was super good. It was basically like, what, 4 or 5 episodes straight of just nothing but crazy animation and combat, footable at their best. Was super fun and entertaining that way. But the story of season 2, didn't care. It just felt like it went nowhere. The first half felt like it was just blah. It was super blah. This season started off with a full hour long episode. Besides the constant panning of 3D fortress buildings flying everywhere in this demon realm, the infinite castle, I think it's called, where the big bad is at. Besides that whole thing, I loved it. It was like a great setup to something that I finally care about. Like, it suddenly reinvigorated my like for the series. Not that I think it's the greatest storytelling ever, But I got excited for the story again. It's them going to the swordsmith village where they make the swords that all the demon slayers use. And it's this village they try to keep secret where it's at because they don't want the demons coming in and destroy it. And, yeah, we have Tanjiro go there to get a new sword. He visits the place, and then havoc breaks out. And so far, the last couple episodes have been pretty hectic as we just had finally battles start breaking out, punch of crazy stuff happening, best girl in the box popping out and being crazy awesome, which is always good as well. Always love Nezuko moments. It's just really good. I will say, like, this recent episode, I was a little bit frustrated because it was like it kept cutting to Tanjiro where he kept saying the same thing over and over again. I'm not sure what that was about, but it kept cutting to him and he kept saying, Nezuko, this other guy, hang in there. And it would cut away and it would come back. Nezuko, this other guy, keep hanging in there. I'll be there in a minute. It's like, stop doing that. But other than that, it's been really crazy cool. I've always loved the aesthetic of it. It's got a great style to it. Great animation by Ufotable. And like I said, I will admit, it's obviously, there's a lot of love and desire for this season because of Mitsuri. Mitsuri Thigh Girl. And now she's finally running into the mix. And I'm like, yes, I get to see Mitsuri in action. Demon Slayer sort of has that nice way of kind of establishing, like, this powerarchy system where you have, like, all the Demon Slayers that are kind of building themselves up, like Tanjiro, they're getting stronger. And then you have, like, essentially the captains. Like, all the people that hold all the power. What are they called? Hashiras?
Hashira.
Yeah, Hashiras. Right. Yeah, Hashiras.
Yeah.
And then have all the Hashiras. And they do it really well in, like, kind of, and you got a sense with this from the previous season, this idea that they're not like gods or anything. Like they still get their butt kicked. They're not immortal beings. And there is this kind of sense, and you kind of got it, the feeling of it with the end of the second season was this suddenly these, like, we have hope for the future. We have kids that are actually, you know, rising up and getting strong. They overcame this challenge. There is hope. And I like that kind of dynamic, that sense that they're not immortal, and at the same time, you can get as strong. And like I said, what all kind of concluded with the second season and how they kind of established this third season, that I'm starting to actually like the series again. I was okay with it early first season. It was like some point mid first season that I just kind of went, okay, this is really cool. I like this. And now I'm getting that same feeling again. So it's kind of re-sparking my hope. Again, not say it's craziest storytelling ever. It's not, but at least it's entertaining me and I'm excited for it. So that's Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba. Galaxy Next Door. Did you watch some Galaxy Next Door?
Yeah.
Did you like the Stinger Girl?
Yep.
Stinger Girl. Where is it at? Galaxy Next Door or Otonari ni Ginga. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll for 12 episodes, done by Studio Asahi Productions, based on a manga, comedy romance. And this one follows a guy named Ichiro, and we find out that his parents have passed away, and he's trying to support his two siblings by kind of pursuing the thing that he's kind of good at, which is being a mangaka. So it's kind of odd because we find out later on that he's just good at writing shoujo, so he just does shoujo. But yeah, he's doing his work. At some point, he's becoming a little bit overwhelmed by his current schedule, and he's assigned an assistant. He goes to meet the assistant. It's this girl named Shiori. He brings her back to his place. Kind of find out she's never really drawn before, but she's really good at doing all the fill-ins and everything and all the post-work of whatever his sketches are, filling them in. Kind of find out she did like reading a lot of manga back at her home. And at some point, after they finally finish their project and safe, they made their schedule, he's still kind of working on something. She passes out. And then he goes over and notices that she's got this kind of thing sticking out of her side as she's laying there. And he panics, thinking it's like one of those calligraphy pins, like those little sharp pins, like a sticking in her side. And so he goes over and touch to pull it out, and suddenly it zaps him, and she wakes up, and she's like, you touched it. You're not supposed to touch that. In my culture, if you touch that, that means you're married. Only a married person would be able to touch that. And so you've done something terrible. And he's like, I thought something was sticking out of your side. And she's like, okay, well, I kind of understand that, but it's still bad. Come to find out, she is actually like the princess of this group of star people. Like, they're from this island where the star came down and they have this belief system of this lineage of the star princess or whatever that kind of continues through life, and she's the next one, and she has decided to leave her hometown, and she ends up meeting him, working with him, and so him touching that, like I said, is sort of a sign of them being married. So it's kind of like this, I don't know what they're kind of doing here, but it seems like she's like, okay, well, let's see if I can, I'm sending word back to my hometown. We'll see if there's any way to kind of break that ceremony and kind of, you know, break our bond that we just kind of created. In the meantime, let's get to know each other kind of thing. So they're kind of hanging out with each other and weird stuff happens. Just weird stuff happens. Your thoughts on Galaxy Next Door, the Angel Next Door from Another Galaxy of the season. It's kind of funny they're both on Saturdays, Galaxy Next Door and Angel Next Door, and it's season. Oh, by the way, it's from the creator of Sweetness and Lightning too, so.
I actually really like this show. I think it's absolutely adorable. I think that it's it pulls off this kind of more low and slow.
How low can you go?
Just chill vibe in its slowly introducing the relationship between these two characters and the plus that's involved in their family in his family and all that extra. They haven't really dug too much into the kids as far as they're concerned, but I'm sure that at some point that will become a thing. In this last episode, he did mention specifically that the kids were involved in whatever decisions he makes, because he has decided that that would be a part of his life. But as of the moment, they haven't been a forefront part of the story. But their Ichiro and Shiori's relationship has definitely been the forefront, and they've done fantastic job in keeping it as a steady pace of not just forcing it. I mean, the poker was kind of as forceful as they're going to do so far, and it has become an element that has kind of kept them in the same general vicinity because of the physical things that happen to.
He's like dying.
He's dying.
Dies if she leaves.
So it,
or if they're like, I don't know what it's implying, or if it's even
whenever she's upset.
Yeah, it was like he was pulling her away from these dudes that she didn't realize were bad people, and she kind of tugged the other direction for a brief moment. And then suddenly it's like he's gushing blood out of his nose. It's like it's suddenly like you're at odds, and it's like it's deadly. And it's like this is a really bad relationship that he's got himself into, because if he ever upsets her, kind of goes against what she's sort of decided, or they're indecisive together, it's like they have to be in harmony, otherwise he's gonna die. And it's like, this is scary. Does this mean people back at home are dying?
Yeah, that did actually.
She kind of indicated
suddenly
this idea that
became really, really dark when Andrew mentioned
it.
When Andrew mentioned that aspect, I'm like, holy crap! So everybody that's in a relationship, that's like mass murder if she leaves the town.
Well, she was indicating something was affecting people back at home or something like that. It's not saying that they're dying back there, but it sort of indicated this idea that she's not supposed to leave them. This is literally. It feels like it's kind of like, yes, it's saying that this whole lore is the star came down and blessed the person, and then they all follow that person. But it almost feels like this kind of humanizing of a hive. This is a queen, and they're all driven to help the queen. They can't just walk away from the queen kind of thing. And so it's like, it's sort of an interesting, but at the same time, it's weird. It feels weird watching it because I'm like, I don't know if this is supposed to be dark. I thought this was a romance comedy, but it feels kind of dark. Why does it feel dark? I'm feeling uneasy, and I don't know if this is supposed to be doing that. This is Sweetness and Lightning. Be happy.
But anyway, I'm enjoying the show for what it's worth. I think it's absolutely fantastic so far.
Yeah, I can't go with a fantastic, but it's fine for me. Like I said, I'm more watching it out of curiosity. I will say, and this is kind of to lead into my joke earlier about this replacing Angel Next Door with its almost seemingly, I think it's even in its time slot, this replacing Angel Next Door because it had a couple points in this, in the, I think I've only watched two, maybe three episodes. I don't remember. And, but I mean, the whole scene with after he touched the stinger, it was like, this feels weird. This conversation just feels weird because it starts off with her angry because he literally just touched that and he's not supposed to touch that. And he admits, and there's no indication that he should know that. And he's trying to explain that he thought it was a, something stabbing her. And then they kind of, she's like, no, it's my stinger. And then it's like, we don't talk about that again. No, Ichiro, the next question is, wait, why do you have a stinger? What is this thing? And what is it? What? It just feels like he kind of accepts it, but they don't. And then she's mad, but she's not. And she understands, but she doesn't. And he understands, but he doesn't. It just felt like a really weird conversation. But out, but that aside, and the weirdness of it, which is fine to be weird with this whole concept of the stinger and stuff, and the powers that it has upon him, it's a fine show. Ichiro is very quickly established as being a good guy. I mean, he's trying to take care of his siblings. And even the siblings kind of acknowledge the fact that he's working really hard to support them. And she acknowledges the fact that he's a good guy because he's taking care of them and that they have this really nice bond there. And so she obviously wants to help out. She likes the manga and she wants to draw it and stuff like that. It's a solid cast of characters, and I like Shiori's character. I think she's a fantastic character. So nothing's really kind of – nothing's being done wrong, but at the same time, it's weird but not doing incredible, I guess is the way I'd put it. So it's enough for me to keep going. Hopefully no more weird conversations. But I think it's a nice – I think the stinger thing and the whole aspect of her hometown and – the star and everything like that kind of gives it a little nice twist to a typical, let's face it, perfect waifu show, which is very prevalent these days. But she hasn't really, I mean, she's beautiful and she's really good at drawing, which is perfect for him. But I don't necessarily think that they're trying too hard to sell her on being like this perfect person. So that's kind of a nice thing too. So we'll see. We'll see. That's Galaxy Next Door. Don't touch stingers unless she's really hot. And then do it at your own risk. Don't touch stingers unless she's really hot, and then do it at your own risk. Why Raliana ended up at the Duke's mansion, or Kanojo ga Koshaku te ni itta ryu. This one opens up, this is on Crunchyroll, by the way, 12 episodes being done by Typhoon Graphics, based on a manga. This opens up with Raliana, well, it opens up with this girl that is just getting accepted into a university, I think, and as she's excited about it, she's up on this roof with somebody. She don't even remember why she was on the roof, but this person on the roof pushed her off the roof. And as she's falling to her death, she's like, oh, that sucks. I just got accepted at university and I'm going to die. Who the heck pushed me? I don't know. She's transported into the body of a girl named Raliana. And Raliana is the daughter of a baron, a guy that was a baron, a guy given the title of baron because he had like this huge success in the oil industry. And really quickly, Raliana realizes, or this girl in Raliana's body, realizes who Raliana is. Raliana is a character in a story that she wrote, or she read, which in this novel, Raliana was a side character that is murdered really quickly by her husband, or her fiancé, or husband, with a heavy husband. And this was a plot line for the main protagonist character who returns home upon hearing about Raliana's death, and discovers the truth that her husband killed her. And that's really on a story. Literally, it's the opening chapter, like the opening segments of the novel is this girl named Raliana dies. Protagonist comes to town, finds out who the killer is, and that's it. So she's like, I got to get separated from this guy because he's after my parents' money and he's just going to kill me. So I need to get away from him. So she's trying to drop all these hints that she doesn't want to be have anything to do with him, but he just keeps pressing, obviously, because he intends to steal all of her family's money. Eventually, she's at this one ball, and who shows up? Pretty much the protagonist of the story. Not the heroine character, the main character, but this protagonist character, which is Noah Wainwright. And he's basically the main love interest of the main heroine character. And so she's like, what the heck? Why not? Why not try this? So she follows Noah, who's pretty much the brother of the current king. He's like the next line to be the king. She follows him out into this garden and comes up to him, and she knows full knowledge about the story that he's in. So she says to the guy, hey, I need your help, and I have this proposition for you, and I know something about this stamp. What was it called? Was it a stamp, wasn't it? It was like this.
It's a stamp, yeah.
Yeah, there's a stamp. But basically, in this whole history of this world,
it's a stamp.
It's a noble. It's all about nobles. And at some point, capitalism is rising. And in order to stop pretty much new nobles from being able to get titles and to rise up, the old guard of nobles wanted to enact this law. And the law requires them to stamp it with this stamp.
Right.
And she knows that Noah, the main protagonist, love interest of the story, has that stamp. So she's basically trying to gain his interest and use him by her knowledge of the stamp. So, yeah, the fiancé shows up and says, Reliana, what are you doing out here? And she's like, oh, I told you I didn't want to be with you anymore. I'm with Noah now. And she says, I know this hint, hint, at the stamp. And so he's like, yes, we're together now. Well, he meets up with her later in his office, and he's like, okay, what do you know? She's like, I know that you have the stamp. And he's like, okay, don't care. Anything else? And she's like, crap. So then she, as she's leaving and he's not, you know, taking the bait, she's like, okay, well, she starts to essentially see this chessboard in his room. And she knows that one of the chess pieces is in not necessarily the wrong spot, but it's not in the spot it's supposed to be yet. And so she lays out the fact that that every chess piece on that chessboard is a certain power within this area. And she notes, basically tells him what's going to happen with one of those powers. And it catches his interest. So he decides to kind of agree to it. And so basically, in order to avoid her fiance, he's going to act like they're marrying each other. And so at the same time, he, from his ends, like, okay, you're going to act as my wife whenever I need you to act like my wife. So that thus starts the story. And I guess that's plenty to go through. That's actually more than I thought it would turn out to be. Your thoughts?
This is a story that I hope is as brilliant as it's opened up to be. One of the cool things about this is the light novel aspect of it, where she's basically, it's not a Tome game. It's not an Atome game.
I thought it was a villainous Atome game. Like, no, it's not an Atome game. And she's not the villainous.
Yeah.
You get to meet the villainous, by the way.
It is literally the a light novel. So what this does,
it's like a mystery. It's like a mystery romance. I think it's what they're pretty much implying it to be. Very political mystery type of story,
right? And that's gonna make it what will make or break this show. I mentioned this to when me and Andrew were talking about it at one point. One of the things that I think will be really cool is the fact that literally the world will be changing based around what decisions she's making. So as she's influencing characters, she will be straying farther and farther and farther away from the light novel. So will that in turn cause her to have less knowledge of the future? Which is interesting unless they have some kind of a spin on the reset points, where literally if she is if this is multiple mysteries into the future, she takes over the place of the heroine or whatever have you, and she starts to become go into other mysteries, which she will have the knowledge of those mysteries, and then those are kind of her reset point, per se, is she's now taking over the protagonist, and she is, so things like that are going through my head as to how this could play out and how interesting and brilliant it is if they do actually play out well and they are well thought out in the way they do it. As it stands right now, it's a fantastic story. I think that it's really I find a lot of intrigue in Noah and his kind of interplay with her, and how he's trying to manipulate her and she's trying to manipulate him back, and their intrigue
she's
on each
not
other.
Doing anything to him, that's the funny part. She's not messing with him
I
at
said
all.
She's trying to manipulate
trying to
But yeah,
she is playing in the palm of his hand. It's not even funny.
It's a lot of fun as it is right now. So yeah,
I love their chemistry so far. I didn't think I would actually like their chemistry, because he felt very kind of just... he's just a fake smile, very kind of composed, very gruffy man. And you obviously get the indication from her telling about the story that it's from, is that this is a very brilliant man. And he's literally like this key thing from the king himself to essentially work under the guise of helping the old guard of nobles, when in fact he's just getting information and stuff. And it's playing very well how kind of very clever he is, at the same time sometimes giving a little bit, but for the most part really kind of keeping her in check, because essentially she is asking a lot of him. She just shows up out of nowhere and says, I know about all this incriminating evidence against you. Help me. And it's like, why would I help you? It's doing very well in their chemistry together. And you get a sense very quickly, this guy likes her. Like, he likes Raliana. And it's a character that he would never have met in the novel, because she dies. He never meets her. But now meeting her, and it is this other person that has more information that she should have, and she's trying to sort of play into him, but at the same time trying to get things from him. Again, he's not fooled, and I really do love his nature and how he really kind of teases her. And she hates it, but at the same time, she kind of goes along with it. So it creates a very, very interesting and very, very entertaining dynamic between the two of them, because she's trying to constantly connive and figure something out in her benefit. And a lot of things blow up in her face, but he's always kind of at arm lengths to her and helping her at least, which I really do appreciate. And we've already kind of established a lot of situations where now that she's in this position, she's realizing, I don't know if I want to be here, because yeah, now the villainous character of the story, yeah, she's after you now, because you're taking the place of the protagonist that had to deal with that, or the heroine that had to deal with that character. It's doing really well. And yes, it's technically playing a lot off the idea that despite the fact that she's using him, he's obviously going to use her as a pawn. So he's using her to get in with this, essentially the wives group. The wives group that can sometimes manipulate the powers. So he's basically pushing her into that. And it's, it sucks because this recent episode ended on a cliffhanger. That all kind of blew up in her face at the very end. So I'm really liking it. I'm surprised how much I'm liking it. I literally watched the first couple or three episodes without paying too much attention, because I wasn't really expecting too much of it. So I ended up actually rewatching the whole thing the other day, and it's just good. I really enjoy it, and I think it's a really nice isekai twist, the isekai genre. Really like Raliana's character, and I'm with Chris on this one. I really hope this has significant legs to it, and I think so far it's kind of proven that with the arc with the wives group and getting with the villainess and firing back and forth with her. Nick is so cool. I love Nick. He's like the fashionista that knows everything about
Nick
everybody.
Is awesome.
He is so cool. And yeah, his little run in with the villainess was fantastic. So he's allergic to BS basically. He's allergic to vixens or something like that. It was so good. I love the characters. I think they're fantastic. So definitely like I think this is going to end up being hopefully the hidden gem of the season, because I don't really see anybody talking about it, and it's definitely on my radar right now. So yeah, looking forward to more. Really fantastic. So I need to make a video on it. I'm thinking of making a video on it this week. So that, and I still need to do Sacrificial Princess, but that show is like super slow in airing. Dead Mount Death Play. For those who don't know, by the creator of, who is it, Chris? You say it rather than me. That way it doesn't, that nobody gets mad at me. Who created this one? Who created Dead Mount Death Play, the manga that this is based off of? Thank you, Chris. Anyways,
there was something about it that it made me not really all that wanting to get into it.
Oh no, Chris is bashing two of the.
No, I have not
ever.
Bothered. I have not done this.
I thought you liked
Salty. I forgot that it was an isekai, and I went, oh, that's another isekai, and then I was like. But there was something about it that I wasn't really sure on, and I it was because of how dark it was, and I forgot it was da-da-da. I know how dark he gets, so yeah.
That is not that dark. Bakano was. Yeah, streaming on Crunchyroll for 12 episodes. Apparently, it's going to be a second part in fall, so it's already got slated for 2 cores. Being done by Geek Toys, which not the greatest studio ever. Sources of manga, genres are action, fantasy, supernatural, thriller. But yeah, this one opens up in this fantasy world where there is this great necromancer, this thing known as the Corpse God, and he's in this cave, so to speak, labyrinth that is drawing a bunch of monsters in, and so mankind decides they need to take this thing out. So they go in there, and they're getting their butt kicked by this Corpse God, and eventually they send in the Calamity Crusher, which is this great warrior from the church that will take it down. And as they're fighting, we establish that both of these individuals have one thing in common, is that the fact that they both possess what they call the Evil Eye. And the Evil Eye is the ability to see spirits and dead things, and for most people, it drives them crazy. So in order to kind of save yourself, most people with the evil eye will go to the church and serve the church and live in solitude so they don't have to worry about it. Or, if you don't, typically you become a necromancer and you go to the bad side, basically. And so the Corpse God is obviously the one that didn't do that. And so they're fighting each other, and everybody's like, oh man, I don't know if he's going to be able to beat the Corpse God. And eventually they go to this one big last blow, and then we cut to modern times Japan. And this person wakes up, and he's looking around, and he's like, wait, this looks weird. Why is the ground weird? The walls are weird. Walks out to the street and goes, whoa, what, this is weird. Everybody looks happy here. It's weird. And at some point, he ends up bumping into a police officer, and yeah, he's got this cut in his throat because I don't know why. He's bleeding out his throat, so the cops are wondering if he's doing cosplay or if he's injured. And then this girl shows up and runs off with him. And they go into this alleyway, and then she goes, oh, I want to check, see if you're okay before I kill you again. Yes, I was. This girl was the one that killed him, apparently. Or this person that they're in the body of. And so she tries to kill him. Eventually, she corners him in this warehouse where he summons... Big spoiler here, by the way. The first episode spoiler. The big twist that everybody else seen that I didn't see. Or this the twist that I didn't know was a twist at the time. These big skeletal hands come out and impale the girl. Yes, this is the Corpse God. He was the one that was isekai'd. Not the hero, which apparently it was supposed to make us think that. I immediately thought it was a Corpse God when he first woke up there because he said, did the spell go off? And I'm like, oh, it's the Corpse God. Okay. But anyways, when we come to find out, the Corpse God's not a bad person. It's just the world sucks. Because the world that he came from, he was, yes, he had the evil eye. He got sold by his parents off to this group that was fighting against the kingdom, and he became a necromancer. And then when the empire kind of collapsed and he was on his own, he just wanted to find peace somewhere. He wanted to find peace somewhere. And he ended up stumbling upon some kids that were orphans, and he, you know, gave them food to help them out. And eventually the kingdom came and said, oh, you've been touched by the necromancer. Kill these children. They burned the children alive. And he killed all the soldiers and then ran into this cave. So he just wants a world that's peaceful. And obviously, seeing Japan, it looks peaceful. And so he pretty much, at that point, decides that he's going to try to put, through the advice of the lady that hired the girl that killed him, money equals peace. So he decides he's going to try to make money while trying to help people out at the same time. And I didn't only see the second episode after that. No, the third episode where he goes into pretty much taking on jobs, which is pretty much what I assumed it was going to turn into, where he gets a job, he goes out, kills bad people, and then gets the real story from what actually happened kind of thing from the spirits. So, oh yeah, he also revived the girl that he killed. She's now a necromancer, or not a necromancer, a zombie, and her bite paralyzes you. So she tries that out on him, and he falls over and paralyzed. Thoughts on this show so far? It's okay. Second episode sucked. I'm going to be perfectly honest. First episode was solid. Like I said, it sucks that I assumed it was the Corpse God. Yes, throughout the episode, I'm going, It makes me feel like the episode was trying to paint it as it's supposed to be a hero because he's talking about wanting peace and stuff. But I assumed it was a Corpse God because he said, I was wondering if the spell went off, which he was doing a reincarnation spell. The hero wasn't really doing a spell. He casted a spell, but then he stabbed his knife down at the Corpse God. So again, I missed the twist, so it didn't really affect me too much. But it was a solid opening. Just the idea of, I think the main intriguing thing, and it sort of bled into the second episode, it was a little bit of hope there of like, oh, this sort of could be a cool concept. This idea of what mankind deemed as the bad guy wants peace. And but the my issue that I'm having right now is I want it to do one thing, but I don't think it's going to do that. The one thing I want it to do is, yeah, have him rise to power, take over our modern times world as to make peace. And then, yeah, eventually the hero will probably figure out how to use that spell and get there, and he'll be taking on this guy, the Corpse God, when the Corpse God has made peace in this world. That's my hope, but I don't think it's going that route. I think it's going to go what I assumed was going to happen, which literally happened in the third episode, which is kill bad, evil people, and then learn their true story through the ghosts. Basically, the ghosts are telling him what's actually happening when people are trying to deceive everybody else. They also have this other group that's kind of trying to investigate the whole thing, and they obviously have their own powers, so obviously he's not the only one with special abilities, even though he claims that there's no magic in the world. So we'll see. But so far, it's okay. I have a lot of hope for the story just because I do like the writer, obviously. He's very good at creating supernatural in a normal world. Like, it's like da-da-da-da. It's literally night happens and suddenly there's the Dullahan? Yeah, Dullahan. Selty is riding through the neighborhood without it, with the smoke coming off her neck, looking for her head. That ability to kind of create a believable modern setting, but have this little twist of supernatural in it. Bakano was the same way. So I have hope for it. Main guys, I feel for his story, but at the same time, he's kind of boring. Zaki is not as annoying as I thought she would be. She's very kind of ganky. Oh, I don't die, so I got a bunch of bullet holes in me and then punch people. So it doesn't really have a great chemistry so far. Takumi was the nerd guy. Shrug. So I think that's the only issue it has right now, is I don't really care about the characters or the chemistry. But I have hope for it as a story overall. So we'll see. But yeah, it's Dead Mount Death Play. Did we not do Insomniacs after school yet? Was that late? Yeah, that was a late starter, wasn't it? Because I think we're only like 3 episodes now, aren't we? Did you get a chance to watch Insomniacs after school?
Yeah.
Okay, good. good. Insomniacs after school, I thought I had it higher up, but apparently not. It was a late starter, so I guess it makes sense. Kimi wa Hokago Insomnia. This one is Leiden Films, which of course is known for doing Call of the Night, which I think is really apt for this series. But yeah, this one follows a guy named Nakami, who has a big problem with sleeping. He has insomnia. Kind of gets into the idea that he can't sleep all night. He's tried different methods of doing certain things, like listening to certain radio broadcasts, reading a book, all this kind of stuff. Can never sleep at night. Talks about how the fact that, you know, it feels like, you know, the stress of not being able to sleep sort of causes him not to be able to sleep. During the day, he has massive headaches. And it's kind of a spiral of, you know, an uncontrollable issue, because not sleeping causes you to stress. The stress causes you to not be able to sleep. You don't sleep, it causes stress. That doesn't mean it's a constant thing. Well, at some point, while he's in class, they're setting up for this festival. They need some more cardboard boxes, so they send him off to this observatory. And we get this story about there's this observatory that nobody goes to because there's this ghost story about this girl that really liked this club member of the soccer team, I think it was. She confessed, failed, and then she jumped from the observatory. So everybody kind of is afraid of this ghost of the observatory, because the story continues in the idea that this boy from the club looks in a telescope and sees this girl waving back at him from the moon, and keeps looking for that as he lives longer and longer. He keeps checking telescopes, keeps seeing this vision, eventually realizes that she was waving for him to come to the moon for her. So yeah, everybody's spooked about the observatory. He goes up there knowing it's not true. There's no ghosts. Goes in there, ends up finding a really nice spot to sleep, lays down for a couple seconds, and then notice that there's this girl in a locker that's tilted over, sleeping next to him. And she jumps up, goes to run out the observatory, and then goes, oh, this actually doesn't open from this side, and you close the door, so they're stuck in there. And so, come to find out, she has a problem with insomnia too. So they have something in common. They both can't sleep at night, and she has been basically sleeping there. Kind of find out she made the rumor, by the way, so that nobody would come up to the observatory. And she doesn't want to tell anybody. He's like, you know, we need to call somebody. You have a phone. Let's call somebody. She's like, no, I don't want anybody to know. You'll find out later that she just has this. She used to be really sick when she was young, very frail, very weak. And so she doesn't want anybody to know that she has problems now, because she feels like she was a huge burden upon people when she was younger. So he calls up his friend that he's told about his insomnia. And while they're waiting, they fall asleep. And they wake up. She's been drooling on his leg, but that's aside, they had a really good sleep together. They were sleeping there, got their rest, headaches gone, and then they go about their days. Well, she ends up giving him the combination for the lock for the actual observatory, and they start hanging out there together. She makes this kind of night grouping kind of thing between the two of them, that at night they'll hang out together because neither of them really have anything to do at night. And during the day, they try to sleep in the observatory. So, and trying to figure out methods to fix their insomnia at the same time. So, and they eventually get caught. They're forced to actually make an astronomy club in order to keep going there, and so on and so forth. Thoughts?
Love it. It's absolutely hits me on certain aspects. As a recovering insomniac, which has slipped back into insomnia, I absolutely love that they are actually going and they're hitting a lot of the points that I had to deal with. The laying down, having your head going a million miles an hour, constantly thinking about stupid stuff, waiting when you look up at the clock and see that it's 5:30, knowing that you have to get up at 6 o'clock, so you might as well not even bother going to sleep. So you get up and deal with life with headaches all the time and all that. Everything that they're absolutely talking about, I know every bit of it. I love it. I think it has the ambience of the nighttime, like we talked about with Call in the Night. They absolutely are hitting it in this show as well.
They just do really good with colors and contrasts every time. And it was great in Call of the Night, and it's great here.
So I absolutely love it. I think that they're doing an absolutely fantastic job. It's a little bit lower paced than most of the other shows. It's a slice of life, so that's actually kind of very fitting. I love the interplay between the main two characters and a lot of the supporting cast as they're coming into the fold. So I think it's doing a fantastic job.
Did you like the subtle hint that she gave him? I thought that was super cute.
Which one?
When they first started the club thing, she said that she'd wave back at him or something like that.
Yeah.
It's basically, she's into you, dude. That was a confession. It was funny because some people were saying that was her saying that the story is true, or that she might be a ghost or something like that. I'm like, no, she's just saying that she likes him. I mean, you could draw that conclusion, but I guess, yeah, but no. I'm really loving this show. I think it's absolutely fantastic. This is like right there, right next to Skip and Loafer. Like this is a season of slice of life romance, and both of these shows are doing that slow progression of romance so well. Granted, I think Skip and Loafer is focusing on a very large cast, and so it's not quite. You can see the chemistry building between the two main characters, but this one's more focused on Nakami and Magari. I think they're just super good together. I think they're super good. Magari, let's get it out of the way. Magari's super freaking cute. She's absolutely freaking cute. I love her to death. Easily one of my favorite characters this season. But I just love their chemistry because it hits right off the bat with this two people suffering. And they don't... Yes, Nakami does... I think it's great that the two of them sort of portray it differently. But they both are suffering. And they're finding commonality in that suffering and yet also finding a cure together. They feel comfortable together. They had a great night's sleep. And now that transition to Magari saying, okay, well, what do you do at night when you can't sleep? Well, I tried all these things. Well, okay, let's hang out together. So they're just kind of going around the city and dodging the police officers, kind of riding his bike around, having fun together. It's super cute. It's got a great kind of developing romance between the two of these characters that works so well. The other cool thing is I like that early on it sort of established they each sort of dealt with people around them differently based on their past experience. Like I said, Magari had this issue in her past where she was ill, which I'm waiting for it to come back again. This better not be a tragic girlfriend show. I swear to goodness, this better not be a tragic girlfriend show.
They did say the moon. Hello, Andrew.
She's waving for the moon, so when she dies, he'll be looking up the other way. I hate that this is setting this up so crystal clear. She used to be sick. I'm fine now, really. And then this story of this girl that passed away, and she's up in the moon waving to him, and so it makes me believe that Nakami is now learning about astronomy, and he's learning a telescope, and eventually she's gonna die, and he's gonna constantly be looking up at her, trying to find her. Anyways, Anyway, they both deal with their issue differently. Go back to my point.
It's called foreshadow, Andrew.
This is like the pill bottle on the bench in a certain show with a violin. Am I walking into this? Am I doing this again? They have this whole difference in how they handle it. So Magari doesn't want to let anybody know. Doesn't want her friend to know. Doesn't want anybody to worry about her. Even to the point where when they go back in class, he's like, he texts her, you know, don't interact with me. Otherwise people are going to question, you know, that we know each other, and it's going to get into your insomnia issue. Don't interact. Like a cute little salute. She's so cute. But he's kind of different. The idea that he's divulged this to his friend. He's divulged it to the teacher. The teacher's been trying to help him out with it. So he's a little more open with it. So there's a kind of contrast between the two of them. I think the only thing that sort of made me a little bit question was the recent episode when we started getting into Shiro Amaru, which is like somebody that was a part of the astronomy club back when it used to actually be open. And they won an award and everything like that for a photo. I thought that episode was a little bit shrug. I thought the ending of it was cute. Shiromura kind of sending them a picture and kind of, you know, panicking because it's a bunch of high schoolers she sent the picture to and is kind of a little embarrassed about it. So it kind of had a cute ending to it. I love that moment with the two of them taking their first photo of the stars and stuff like that. It was cool. But it did feel like a little bit of a step back. So I'm hoping it'll just kind of steer back to progressing positively. But yeah, the first few episodes though were really good, and it looks great, visually great. Like the characters so far, love the chemistry, and I like how naturally the romance is sort of blossoming. So yeah, I cannot wait for more. This is easily, did I put this as number two? It was either three or four. Skip and Loafer, and this one was Fighting With Each Other. I think currently this is probably possibly above Skip, but yeah, anyways, it's great. Go watch it. What else? We did Oshinoko already. What is this one? Oh, that's the orphan show. Marginal Service. Did you watch Marginal Service?
No.
I don't have much to say about this show. It just feels like my whole hype for Marginal Service was around their great PR around it because it was original. 3Hz was working on it. Cygames was pumping money into it, obviously, because of being a producer. Cygames has money. That's a stupid assumption, by the way. It had a lot of great publicity going behind it. Their key art releases, they had no synopsis for it. There was barely any trailers until way late. And then when the trailers came out, it looked like a Super Sentai. Kind of like that show that we really love. Gatchaman Crowds kind of thing. Kind of feel to it. And then it came out. And I watched the first episode. I was kind of hyped for it. Like, what the heck is this? It's basically Men in Black. It's this guy who's a detective. He gets the wrong job, gets fired, ends up getting a message to join this organization. The organization basically hunts down mythological beasts and aliens and vampires and stuff like that that are living amongst humans that do something wrong. And again, they just go out and they blow them up. And so the first episode was like, okay, cool. I mean, that was all right. The mystery is gone now. I'm not sure if that's going to transition to multiple episodes. And sure enough, I watched the second episode and it was like, yeah, that's all you guys had was the mystery around what the heck is this show. Nothing else really about it is really working for me. I don't like the chemistry. It has a subtle hint of the idea of the hardened veteran and the goofy newcomer rookie. But for the most part, it's just not really working. It I got a couple chuckles here and there, but for the most part it's just investigate bad aliens or monsters, go and blow them up with a big bazooka, and that's pretty much it. And there's a crazy little gopher or something that works with them too. Did you watch it?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's Marginal Service. I don't really have much to say. It's Men in Black, but not as interesting at all. I like Men in Black, the original, so not the sequels. Asama Ranking or Ranking of Kings, The Treasure Chest of Courage. It's more Boji. I've been enjoying it. I love seeing more Boji. I love seeing Kage. It's like one of those things where I wasn't expecting anything, but then when I started watching it, I was expecting something, and then but I'm still happy. Isn't that weird? Like, this is apparently adapting the skip stories they kind of didn't get into with the original season. So, and like, for instance, in the original series, you had Boji, he goes down to the underworld and he starts getting trained to be strong. And then it kind of cuts to him leaving. Well, this is showing like where he's actually doing training and stuff, and he's learning things. Or when they do their travels back to the kingdom to go save everybody, they have this random occurrence where they have to deal with a situation with this oasis. So it's like, it really does feel like, oh, you remember this part of the first season? Well, something happened right here. Let's get into that. And so it's fine. It's kind of one of those ones where it's like, I almost want to say, wait until it's fully out. If you've never watched Ranking of Kings, wait till this is fully out and then go watch the first season and get like a guide. Because I'm sure there's going to be somebody that's going to say, watch this episode here, watch this episode here. And then it'll probably fill in the original story. Now, I kind of wonder if it would kind of break the pacing of the original series. I like the original pacing of the original series. But there are some of the stories where I'm like, yeah, technically when he was being trained by, was it Despa?
Despa. Yeah, Despa.
When he was trained with Despa, you kind of, again, like it just, it, you knew that Boji was in this room, and then suddenly he's strong and it's like, wait, what? So yeah, it's really good. Like I love Boji, but I more want another season. I don't want short stories, and this is literally just short stories. But if you're a fan of the original Ranking of Kings, you're at home here. More Boji. Can't go wrong. I am hoping that we're going to get more stories of healing or Daida.
We get a healing.
Other characters. So far with the first two episodes I watched, it's just been Boji. And there's a little bit of Kage kind of going on his own for a little bit because he helps this old lady with some stuff. But it's mostly just been Boji's focus. So I'm really hoping for other characters to sort of get a short story. Because, again, I thought these were completely original short stories. But apparently, from what I've heard from two people now, this is actually in the manga. It's just they skipped it. So we're getting those little short stories that were in there. So, yeah. I'm loving it as usual. I'm not going to say it's, like, to the levels that I hyped up the first season. The first season is amazing. But it, as short stories, is fine. I'm liking it, so. And then finally, is this one left, right? Is there any OVAs or anything? I don't want to hype myself up and then find out there's another show. Yeah, I think that's it. That's the last show that we have, unless you watched Pokemonsters.
No.
Did you watch some Pokemonsters?
Nope.
I do want to go check that out eventually. I don't know if I want to get into it, though, because it's probably going to be a million episodes long. I don't think the original Pokemon was that long, so. Yeah, the last one we have is Sacrificial Princess. Did you watch this one?
Yep. No,
yeah? You did.
Yep. Eins und
Actually,
goal.
I think you watched it before I did.
Eins und yeah. Goal.
I know that very quickly. It's like, this guy is just perfect for any big, gruffy dude. Eins und goal voice for Leonhardto. Leonhardto. But yeah, Sacrificial Princess opens up in this world where we do have the beasts, so the monsters of this world, and the humans. At some point, they found peace with each other. But with one caveat, that every so often, the mankind would have to offer a sacrifice to the beasts, which would be sort of a sign that that humans are still below the beasts. They're at peace, but they have to keep showing by sacrificing a human that they have power over them, that they are above them. Well, insert our next sacrifice, which is Sari. Sari is sent off to this realm and put before Leonhardto. Well, he's just known as the king at the time. She calls him Leonhardto later. But she's put before the king, and she's going to be a sacrifice. And then she immediately starts just kind of cracking, like, wise at everything and mocking him and mocking the guy next to him and just making them mad. And he comes up there like, I could crush you right now. And she's like, all right. I mean, she's just, like, accepting it. Well, what we find out over time, because they can't do the sacrificing right off the bat, and he sort of lets her sort of be on a leash a little bit, you know, roam the capital. But what we kind of find out very quickly from Sari's perspective is that she doesn't care if she dies. It's because she knows worse terror than him. And she's very quickly realizing that this king is putting on this facade that he is mad and he's angry and he wants to be scary. And she knows that really quickly. We'll come to find out she's not afraid of him because she's seen greater terror, and that was in her family. She found out at some point when she was growing up, she overheard her family afraid that their daughter was going to get sacrificed. So they actually adopted her and to use her as sort of a decoy so that instead of their daughter being sacrificed, this girl, Sari, that they brought in acting like it's her daughter would be the sacrifice instead. So she was basically raised to be a sacrifice. So, yeah, she doesn't care. She's seen true terror in these terrible human beings of her parents. And so he takes pity upon her knowing this and decides to let her roam and, you know, brings her around places with him. And eventually that all leads to the moment that he's going to have to sacrifice her, at which point we have this big realization that he's half beast. He was born half human. And so he has this insecurity that he will ever be the best. He doesn't feel like he will ever be the king this kingdom deserves. So he's always had this insecurity about himself. And we also find out then that he's never killed any of the sacrifices. He lets them flee, and to show his devotion to his people and to the lives of the person that he lets flee, he cuts his own arm to bleed upon the floor so that people believe that he's sacrificed consumed them, essentially. And that's the point in which she doesn't flee. She says, I have nowhere to go home to, so consume me. At least then I will be a part of something so brave as you. Which, again, he doesn't feel himself as being brave. But she sees through that act that he does every time, he's actually brave. He's actually a good king. So he says, yes, I'm going to consume you. Which essentially just means she becomes one with him. He decides to stroll out with her in front of all of his people and say, here's my new wife. And they're like, wait, it's a human. That's not right. And he's like, I'm king. Come at me, bros.
Come at me, bro.
But yeah, that kind of turns into him having to present her in front of all the nobles, get their acceptance, which they don't obviously at first. But then, you know, her kindness and kind of, you know, going around and offering people food and kind of interacting with them. Eventually, she kind of grows on them. And then eventually leads to him fleeing with her to this one place to see his entire kingdom, where he presents to her basically this idea that he's never felt like he was good enough to be king. But now that she's at his side, he almost feels like he can give up his kingship. Like, he just doesn't want it anymore. He feels like, I could run off and no longer be a king because you're at my side. That's how much she's kind of impacted upon him. But he also feels that's the best opportunity for him to truly become a king. Knowing that he can give it up, with her at his side, he can become a real king. So that's the first two episodes. And I really wanted a third episode before I did a first impressions of it. I'm even holding off my video, but this is like a super late starter. It is going for 24 episodes. It is a complete source material. I could have swore I heard somebody say this was a full adaptation, but I think I'm thinking of Telvatcast, because this is basically doing one chapter per episode, and it's 84 chapters. So unless they do like four seasons, I don't think that's happening, which sucks because... Go ahead. Did you watch two episodes?
I watched everything.
Did to the part where he was looking out upon his kingdom and said that he was, you know, okay. That's two episodes, so yeah. Unless you got more than that, because I
thought there was more than that, but I know it seems like it's been,
it was a super late starter, which sucks. It's only two.
All right.
About day and a half.
I am with Andrew that I absolutely love this show. It is absolutely fantastic. From the get go, she's not snarky per se, but she is excellent at her barbs. She is, I think it's fitting, and I want so much to know.
She's very forward and doesn't hold back, but she's not mean.
She's not mean. And
I'm just going to say it.
She disarms really well. And, it's one of those that you really, really want to see where she goes. And I was actually getting ready to say that she is and I don't know if it's because of this little clip in the OP that I really am curious as to what the snake is involved with her. And so I'm really curious because I think it's fitting that she is kind of a snake. She's very subtle, and when somebody kind of gets her just the right way, she disarms him fantastically, and I really love that about her. And I really, I love Leon Hart. He is absolutely, he has just a heart of gold, really wanting, she pointed out that he really wants what's best for his people, and him having this kind of, I'm not a true king, even though he is really a good king. And I absolutely think that they are absolutely fitting for each other. So I think it's a really fantastic show. I can't wait to see where they go from here. I hope that it keeps its steam all the way through this show or this story.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest issue. And like I said a minute ago, like I watched the first two episodes and I was happy with what I got. I like their chemistry. It's the big bad wolf and the cute little girl, and she just warms his heart. But it kind of twisted a little bit in the idea that you eventually realize he is. It's not so much that she softens his heart and gives him the heart of a human. It's just that he's always had the heart of a human, and he's always been insecure about the fact that he would never be a true king, and he felt that he needed to do that in order to become the king that they want. They want me to be powerful. I have to be angry. Otherwise, we'll lose space to the humans. There's even some that believe that he is already indecisive and that they need to get rid of him so they can be strong again, because he's essentially not attacking the humans. He's being very neutral with them, and he's not causing a war, and he could. So there's some that don't want him to be there because he is, quote-unquote, indecisive, more the fact that he's not wanting to start a war, because he's obviously technically human and beast. Why would he want to? But the problem that I'm having, and why I really want another episode, is because, one, it's going for 24 episodes, so it means that it's probably going to get a little bit, it may take a little bit longer to get to something where it's starting to pick up. But I really do feel like these first two episodes were just literally establishing the norms that you would expect. Let's be honest, this is an open up sacrifice beast. It's the Beauty and the Beast, and they're the unexpected couple. They come together, and obviously the people of one side or the other is not going to be happy about that, and they have to sort of squash that out a little bit. And then, thankfully, sort of, it's establishing very quickly that these are two that do have feelings for each other. Now, the question mark is what next? This really does feel like this is the prologue. This is the setup. Now what is my big question mark that I have at this point? Is it going to get into the relationship with the humans, the neutral zone they kind of touched on for a little bit? Obviously, people not being happy with her being at his side, even though they've already kind of dabbled in that already. What next is my big question mark? And so it's hard for me to really say this is going to be a good show, which is, it's the case with all first impressions. I need more. I need to know more before I can say, check this out or not. So far, I'm enjoying it. I like their chemistry. I think she's cute. It gives me a lot of vibes of Tell of Outcasts, and that's a good thing. I like the whole... Sorry is literally Wisteria. It's just like so funny how similar they are. And yeah, technically, Leon Hart is sort of... kind of like, I forget what his name is, the guy from Outcast.
Mephisto or something.
Yeah, they sort of have that same gruffiness, but Leon Hart really did change very quickly from what that was. The moment that she pointed out that he's acting angry on purpose, and then get into the fact that he's part human, it really shattered that. And I really feel like Leon Hart just completely separate himself from Tell of Outcast. But I really do feel like Sari and Wisteria are kind of similar in the idea. They just say what they want to say, despite the fact there's a really angry-looking, gruffy guy in front of them. And they don't really kind of hold things back while not being rude at the same time. So they're really cute together, though. I think Sari and Leon Hart is really super cute together. Looking forward to more of their relationship. It's just the overall story. I just don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with the overall story. And that's my big... massive question mark that I have, but looks good so far too. JC Staff's doing a really good job of it. There's only like a couple shots where it looked a little weird. Like they had this one shot where I had to go back a couple times where he's coming out of the carriage when they arrived at the neutral area, and it's like it looked good, but it didn't when he's stepping out of the carriage. But yeah, overall it looks really good. Like the designs of all the beast people, they have horse people and stuff. They're keeping Leon Hart despite the fact that he's this massive being. They're keeping him on model, which is great. So I can't wait to see more of it. So that's Sacrificial Princess and the King of Beasts. But yeah, that's it. Vinland Saga is finally starting to kick up, but we don't usually do second core first impressions. I think that's it. Can you think of anything that we've missed? Oh, did you watch the OVA for Inukai-san?
Probably.
The pool episode where people were is dragging the dog around the water like it's a baby. I'm like, that's not how dogs paddle. That's not how that works. You can't make a dog paddle that way. They have to have the front paws kind of going. They gotta get those front paws going.
They will absolutely freak out.
Oh gosh, they will scratch the crap out of you too. Never get near a dog in a pool. It's dangerous as hell. Well, at least every dog that we've ever had at a pool, like, they literally want to climb on top of you to get out of the water. You are a landmass. They want to get on top of you. Like, I've literally had dogs pushing me straight down because they just want to stand on you. That's what dogs do when you put them in the water. Unless they just like being in the water. But they will turn to you and they will claw the crap out of you. But yeah, that's... what are we talking about? Inukai-san.
Dogs.
Inukai-san. I haven't watched
dogs in the water.
I haven't watched the second LVA. I was talking to Web Gaming, and he was talking about that the second OVA was supposed to be the Christmas episode, which is supposed to be, like, super crazy. And I'm like, the OVA on the Blu-ray listing site said it was, like, a date at the school festival or something like that. So I don't know if that's it. Did you watch the second one?
No, I'd only seen the first one.
I think I got it, but I have not watched it. But that was a big bummer because I'm like, okay, that sounds really cool. But then I looked up the description. I'm like, no, dude, I'm sorry. I don't think that's what you think it is. It's some school festival. Let's see. Where is it at? I think I got it. Is it that one? It's not Inuni.
14 sounds right because I think 13.
Oh, yeah. 14. That's right. Yeah. That's the episode number. I was looking at the name. You're like looking at the number.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a school festival. They're not doing the Christmas one. Sorry. It is a bunny. She has a bunny outfit.
Usagi.
Yeah. He's got her butt. she somehow shook her butt so much that it flung him. Inukai-san's there again. She's boring. Oh, dang. This is a stickered version. I wonder if this is High Dive. I don't think High Dive got him. Yeah, sorry. It's not the Christmas episode. Sorry. Anyways, that's the first impressions for the spring 2023 anime season. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Oh my gosh, it is that late already?
Yep.
hope you guys enjoyed. As usual, we're at talkspirit.com. It's where you can go for all of our links, social media links, Discord, ways to support us through Patreon, tips link, memberships through youtube.com/otakuspirit. Greatly appreciate you guys' support. It's that stuff that keeps us going. Greatly appreciate it. And with all that said, we hope you guys enjoyed. And here's to, we'll probably do a music episode next time.
Probably.
But yeah, with all that said, you'll take care.
Os.